few years in the playoffs. I've seen them, but they're a team that could beat a lot of Division I A teams. They easily could have beat some even better teams than Michigan this year. A lot of pros come out of that division of football. People write it off like it's 40, 50 years ago. That division. Shot!
Well, howdy! About 1 minute past the hour, and we are on top of another program in this new year. Another program brought to you by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Dedicated people, devoted people. People as concerned with saving this nation as any other group that I'm aware of. Understanding that saving this nation begins with saving the ground that this nation rests upon. CRMW.net, be a member. It's not expensive. Be a part of the solution. Coal River Mountain Watch. Well, it's awfully nice to be back in the saddle again this evening. Now that hopefully things are settling down to something approaching normal, here with the new year upon us, because, you know, among other things, well, okay, how normal can it be? What's the temperature outside? Here's a not terribly scientific phrase for you. Not very cold for January on a mountaintop. So, yeah, you get the idea. But, you know, New Hampshire's over. Off we go sprinting to Nevada. The horse race is on. It's 1-1 for Senators Clinton and Obama. And it's Frisbees and wheat checks for everyone. But, of course, you know, this isn't just any evening here on Head On. No. It's the middle of the week. It is, in fact, Wednesday, and you know what that means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn straight. It is prayer meeting, brethren and sisters, and come on down to the altar. Put your hands upon your subwoofer and feel the healing waves of faith flowing through you. Hallelujah. Amen and amen. As we take a look at the excesses of the religion industry and its bought and paid for shills and toadies, sadly to say, in our government. Let's see. Yeah, by all means, let's have a look at this. New Hampshire is over, but what went on in New Hampshire certainly doesn't deserve to be left in the dust and unmentioned, especially when it's stuff that begins with a headline such as this. Reverend Huckabee delivers sermon on God's army in New Hampshire. This from a Washington Post news article. This past Sunday in Windham, New Hampshire, Reverend Huckabee went into the pulpit. Yes, he did, and delivered a sermon on being soldiers for Christ in God's army. He said the following, and I quote, "When we become believers, it's as if we have signed up to be part of God's army, to be soldiers for Christ. When you give yourself to Christ, some relationships have to go, It's no longer your life. You've signed it over. The Washington Post said, likening service to God to service in the military, Huckabee said, there is suffering in the conditioning for battle. You obey the orders. Wish the heck I was making that up. But I'm not. And you know what? Huckabee came in the third? Yeah, I think. Third, maybe, last night? He ain't out. He's not dead. He's still holding cards till he gets down to the strychnine drinking, tongue speaking, serpent handling South, baby. And I think you'll find by the time that he gets down south, he will steamroller John McCain. He will eat Willard Romney's magic underwear for lunch. Giuliani? That mayor of 9/11 thing isn't going to play very well down south, because he's just going to be another Yankee trying to tell Southerners how to live their lives. So, yeah, hang on to your shorts. This is going to get weird. But I love this idea that he compares being a Christian to being in the military. It's a comparison that Reverend Huxtable would be hard-pressed to make, seeing how Reverend Huxtable couldn't be bothered to serve in the United States military. Yep. No military service for Reverend Huxtable. So, and you know, for that matter, his dog torturing son hasn't felt compelled to join the military either. But you know, so what? On the one hand, you've got Reverend Huxtable, who thinks that going to church makes you a member of some sort of radical militia. And, you know, he may be right. He is, after all, Reverend Huxtable, what would be referred to, if he were Muslim, as a radical cleric. He just is. He believes insane crap. And he want, and you know, and so what if he believes insane crap? That's his right. He can believe as much insane crap as any human brain can hold. But, and this is the important part, but Huxtable does not have the right to try to compel you, me, we, us to also believe his insane crap. And that's where the difference lies. Because the Reverend Mike Huxtable is, again, using the language that is most frequently applied to Muslims, he is a theocrat. He is a radical. He is a fundamentalist. And I wouldn't trust him within 1,000 feet of the Constitution of the United States. Probably go and start speaking in tongues and spray spittle all over it and make the ink run. And next thing, what First Amendment? Oh, dang, I rubbed it out with my spit. So here's your choices. If you're a repig licking, Reverend Mike Huxtable, radical cleric, Senator John McCain, who gleefully dropped bombs on peasants from 40,000 feet in the air and nearly blew up his own aircraft carrier. Or how about Rudy Giuliani? Yeah, hey, you know, I mean, granted, he's kind of creepy and he I guess he's going for the transgender vote with those Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend costumes that he's been seen running around in. But, you know, he's a lawyer. At least maybe he understands the law. Not so much. 10 years after George Orwell's book was published, March 17th, 1994, I believe, Sherman, if you will set the Wayback Machine. Mayor Giuliani said, and I quote, "What we don't see is that freedom is not a concept in which people can do anything they want, be anything they can be. Freedom is about authority. Freedom is about the willingness of every single human being to cede to lawful authority a great deal of discretion about what you do."
Wes, Edith.
Yeah, really. This was at a forum on March the 16th, 1994. A forum on urban crime. And he said that New Yorkers were inclined, quote, to see only the oppressive side of authority. Yes, we didn't. Yeah, New Yorkers don't see the fun, the candy cane toting, tap dancing side of authority. What we don't see is that freedom is not a concept in which people can do anything they want, be anything they can be. 1994, isn't this? Yeah, that's back when the Army was running the "Be All That You Can Be" jingle ads, right? Freedom is about authority. Freedom is about the willingness of every single human being to cede to lawful authority a great deal of discretion about what you do. Well, I think we need an explanation. Well, no, I don't think we need an explanation. There's Rudy Giuliani in a nutshell. You know, this is the same Rudy Giuliani who was mayor of New York when Amadou Diallo was blown away and Abner Louima was raped with a broom handle by his cops. Norman Siegel at the time was executive director of the New York Civil Liberties Union, and he said he was floored by the mayor's definition. "Order is an element of freedom," he said, "but to put the emphasis on order rather than on a just and fair society is inverting the meaning and significance of freedom." See, that's the way it is with authoritarian Republicans. Yeah, they think, well, you know, if you give those people, and those people qualifies as anybody but them, mind you, if you give those people too much freedom, I mean, they'll be peeing in the streets, and, I mean, they'll just run rampant, and you know, our women won't be safe anymore. Freedom isn't free. Maybe that's what that really means, isn't it? Maybe freedom, and, you know, the juxtapose this with the constant drumbeat refrain of the Ron Paul people who say, "Let's try freedom for a change," as if they weren't. But, you know, that should tell you right there, Rudy Giuliani's not going to have a problem with extending the Patriot Act. Rudy Giuliani's not going to have any problem with unlawful surveillance of your phone calls, your emails, your private conversations, with sneak and peek searches into homes when people aren't in their homes. Nope, not going to have any problem with that, because after all, he wants to be not just the mayor of 9/11, but the president of 9/11. So, it tells you a lot, I think, about Repiglicans when you look at how they vote. New Hampshire people, as I noted last night, have had a man crush on John McCain since 2000 and acted accordingly yesterday. But what about the rest of the field? They were about as crazy about Fraud Thompson, you know, half dead Fred, as Southerners will be about Giuliani. But Huckabee, Huckabee survived because there are enough religious, theocratic, weird religious weirdos in New Hampshire to keep him afloat. He just needed to get past New Hampshire. He's got to get down to South Carolina where he can start speaking in his Southern Baptist right-wing fundamentalist code and be understood at every turn. And the Republican Party remains scared to death of him. McCain, not so much. That was McCain's moment in the sun. Other people have won New Hampshire and not won... Well, wait a minute. McCain won New Hampshire and didn't win the Republican presidential nomination. No big deal. Huckabee, well, Richard Viguerie, who is a right-wing freak in his own right, has come out and called Huckabee a Christian socialist. Man, they're bringing out the big guns when they start calling Huckabee. I've seen it now. They've called him a socialist and they've called him a liberal. Next up, liberal socialist. So, you know, you get a pretty good idea of what's going on inside the Republican power base. But gee whiz, freedom is not a concept in which people can do anything they want, be anything they can be. No one ever said it was, Mr. Mayor. Your rights end where my nose begins, right? What an amazing statement. Election year or not, what an amazing statement. Freedom is about authority? That would have played well in 1920s Rome, wouldn't it? You want some Foscas there, Mr. Giuliani Lini Musso? The willingness of every single human being to cede lawful authority and a great deal of discretion about what you do. Damn, that would have played really well with Chairman Mao, too, wouldn't it? This is kind of astonishing. I mean, we knew he was this way. Any man who's a mayor and has a police department that runs a hog flipping wild the way his did is, you know, you're not. That's not going to be surprising. But gee whiz. Cede to lawful authority a great deal of discretion about what you do. In what regard, Mr. Mayor? In regard to the job I do to feed my family? In regard to the kind of car I drive? If I drive? The food I eat? The air I breathe? So, Mayor Giuliani, we can just rely on government to make all the right choices about, you know, what people need, you know, whether we need clean air, clean water, clean soil. Jiminy. Breathtaking. Breathtaking. 19 minutes past the hour, and we start up by going to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
This is Kate.
Hey, Kate.
Hey, I don't know if you like being corrected or not, but wasn't 1984 published in 1948?
Oh, did I say published?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
You said 10 years.
Too much gin. Too much gin on the Salisbury steak this evening.
And I just picked up on edible underwear. Oh my God, this is going to be more exciting than I.
Edible underwear? I must be like in the spirit or something. I said edible underwear.
You said he would eat Romney's underwear.
Oh yeah, he will. He will, and it's going to be really kinky and probably on pay-per-view.
I don't even care. I thought I would. Since this is a front porch, and you all know how I feel about the election bowl. It's only January. Oh, my God. And why are we talking about Giuliani? He's not going to win anything. And, I mean, oh, God, I'm just frustrated.
Well, okay, let me answer that question, okay. Why are we talking about Giuliani? We're talking about Giuliani because the man is incredibly dangerous.
Yes, he is. Yes.
And frankly, I believe in shining a bright light on a fascist wherever I see one, because that's fascist talk.
Yeah, it is. It is. I agree with you. I just think it's just going on and on and on and on, and even on NPR, it's just going on and on and on, and why did she cry, and are the polls rigged?
Oh, wait, I've got some, yeah, but we won't do that right now.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm not a Hillary supporter. We all understand that, right? But this is a little bit silly. I mean, this is getting full on creepy, file the stalking charges, silly.
Yeah. My question, I was sitting here staring this morning, waiting to get ready to go to work, and and thinking about people who are coming in and doing volunteer work, and who we've got available and that sort of thing, I'm having a meeting with a person whose religion I don't understand tomorrow, and it caused me, and it sort of ties in with how you started the show tonight with the religion and how people around the country are so vastly different. You know, the cultures are different in New Hampshire and Arizona and Iowa and Idaho and Tacoma, Washington, you know.
Yeah, we're fond of saying, well, you know, we're all Americans. There's despite the best efforts of a lot of people, there's still a lot of there's a lot of difference from one area of this country to another.
Yeah, that's for sure. And for me to walk into a culture where I'm not only a Yankee, but I'm a goddamn Yankee because I came back. That's a joke down here. There's just so much going on. There's so much underneath everything in this culture that I just don't understand. And the same way with the national politics. Nothing's just black and white. Nothing is, you know, it's all, nothing's linear. And I just wanted to understand the axiology and the epistemology of the implications of the people that, you know, that what they know and how do they know it down here. And that the people who are working in the most active people in recovery are like the Methodists and Lutherans and Presbyterians and Catholics and Mennonites, and the Nazarenes are pretty active down here too, and their presence is everywhere in terms of disaster relief. And that doesn't mean that other people, the other religions or churches or whoever they are, don't participating, but these people are really, really active. And And I just wondered who those people are and why do they do such, you know, why are they, I guess they're social activists or something. And then the other big pile of stuff I walked into was that I don't understand the difference between the Church of God in Christ, Southern Baptist, American Baptist, Primitive Baptist, Church of Christ, Pentecostal, all of those people. I do not understand why they're kind of competitive and they talk different and they act different, and I don't know who they are, and it's like not a racial issue.
Okay, can I give you the initial smartass answer first, and then we'll work into something serious?
Yeah.
You know, there's an old joke about well, not necessarily an old joke, but you know, the difference between a garden slug and a banana slug.
No.
It only matters to a garden slug or a banana slug.
Oh.
Do you see what I'm getting?
Yeah, yeah. If you pour salt on them.
We're not going to salt the Pentecostals, okay?
And they'll all crawl into a pie pan full of beer, okay?
Well, so will I, but that doesn't make me a slug.
Well, that's how I killed the slugs in Washington. Anyway, okay.
I'll be darned. I'm going to have to remember that, but I don't know if I could part with the beer.
I just blew your shtick, but go ahead.
No. That was a wonderful opportunity. There's the old, darn it, I can't remember his name, Steven something, who's got the two guys standing on a street corner, and the one guy says, "Well, you know, I'm Church of God." And he goes, "Really?" The other guy goes, "Really? I'm Church of God too." He goes, "Really?" The first guy says, "Really? Church of God of Prophecy? Yeah, Church of God of Prophecy. Church of God of Prophecy? 1862 Synod? Church of God of Prophecy, 1862 Synod. First guy says, Church of God of Prophecy, 1862 Synod, free will? And he goes, "No, Church of God of Prophecy, 1862 National Synod. Or 1862 Synod, you know, National." And the guy says, "Die, heretic."
Well, see, that's kind of I walk into conversations with people and I don't know where the hell they're coming from, you know?
Most of these things where the distinctions lay are in ancient grudges and bigotries, okay?
Oh, okay.
A lot of this stuff stems from arguments over how many angels can dance on the head of a pin kind of stuff.
Okay.
Now, okay, I think we can take the Lutherans, the Presbyterians, the Catholics, the Baptists, as read. The Methodists, you know, I mean, they're fairly mainstream and out there and known. But when you start getting into the of gods and the assemblies of God and the this,
oh,
that.
I forgot about them. Yeah. Oh, they're weird.
Oh, they shatter into a million different pieces once you get past God. And what we're referred to up here, like Baptists, up here in the hills, and I don't know, maybe elsewhere, Baptists were referred to as hard shell Baptist and soft shell Baptist.
Oh.
The one being weirder and stricter and more, you know, some of that also devolves in other faiths. You know, we all know, for instance, that Barack Obama is a member of a congregation that is United Churches of Christ. Okay? And, you know, they're an ultra-liberal denomination. But then you go down south and on every street corner you think, you see, you know, Darby Drive Church of Christ. And Sherrod Avenue Church of Christ. And
they're the ones with the red wine glass and the big red...
No. That's the Christian Church.
Okay.
But, you know, you see all that Church of Christ, and if you're from up north, you think, "My, this must be a tolerant community." No. No, these are weirdos. These are people who were split off way over 100 years ago as a sect. Their big hang-up is that they found a verse in Psalms that says, "Sing and make melody in thy heart," so they won't allow a piano or so much as a tambourine or a kazoo in the building. Everything has to be a cappella.
Oh yeah, that's who they are.
And frankly, they are very, very set apart. They want nothing to do with anyone else. I mean, you know, they'll live in the community with you and everything, but they know they're better than you because they're going to heaven and you're not. No matter what you are, as long as you're not them, you're not going.
Mm-hmm. No, that's kind of the feeling I get down here. They all look at me funny and, like, you know, they'll tolerate me, but they know I'm not going to heaven, so... But
what they don't know is that you don't want to be in the heaven that they're in. You go to heaven for the climate and hell for the company.
Sometimes I get a chance to slip that little notion in, and they just look at me funny, but as long as I'm here volunteering, they can't run me off. You know, nobody's going to fire me, and... you know, if I've got the resources, they're not going to, you know, they'll kind of tolerate me. But I just wanted to, well, like, so how come the Presbyterians and Lutherans and Methodists and Nazarenes and Catholics are all such a big, they have big disaster relief programs and none of these other people do? I mean, it doesn't...
Well, for starters, they're huge sects in the United States, so they have more money.
Mm.
Secondly, some portion of their general leadership has made a conscious decision that, you know, that whole thing that Jesus said in, what, Matthew, about if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me, and if you've not done it unto the least of these, you've not done it unto me. There's a sort of philosophical determination that we're not going to re-crucify Christ every day.
Oh, okay.
And so when you overlook the suffering of suffering humanity and you build the new water slide for your church family recreation center instead of feeding the hungry or housing the homeless, you're just putting another spike through Jesus.
Oh. Wow.
Meanwhile, your Southern Baptists and a lot of other organizations are up for building the water slide.
Oh, okay. Well, because I have a feeling that all of the Gulf Coast is owned by the Southern Baptist Conference. Is this an erroneous assumption?
Owned? I don't know that it's owned, but you probably can't swing a dead cat on the Gulf Coast without hitting a Baptist church. That's like you can't swing a dead cat in Italy without hitting a Catholic church. It's what they are. You've got to understand, Kate, that some of this is rooted in population dynamics and the way that the area was settled. You know, the Appalachian region, which peters out like right about where you are, was peopled by Scots, Scots-Irish, English, and Germans. Mm-hmm. And as the old saying goes, the English came and built a house, the Germans came and built a barn, and the Scots came and built a still.
Yeah.
So the Scots bring their Calvinism, and that's, of course, the origins of Presbyterianism, with them. But during the so-called Great Awakening of the early, middle 19th century, with all the circuit riders and so forth, those are Methodists and those are Baptists. And they literally ride on horseback in their black frock-tailed coats.
Yep.
And they ride from church to church, and they do preachings, and you go for all day long, and you sit there and get harangued, and dinner on the ground, and the whole shooting match.
And that guy on that circuit rider could smell a fried chicken 20 miles away.
My ancestor.
Probably mine, too.
I'm literally less than 2 miles from a Baptist church that has been in this region since 1780.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of these cultures, the first thing they do is get to work on a church.
Yeah, right.
You know, as soon as you know, while the people are still living in the wiki-ups and tents,
mm-hmm.
the church goes up first.
Yeah, right.
And it becomes a community center. This is not me being hateful toward religion.
No, it's the hearth of the community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no. When I said they own, I meant they inform the entire culture of the values and the Southern Baptist Conference, or the politicians and the state house and the Senate and the governor.
Sure. Sure.
And they just inform the total culture down here, the Southern Baptist Conference.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And frankly, they drive the politics and they enjoy that power.
That's what I mean. They own the Gulf Coast. I don't know about the rest of Mississippi. I don't care about the rest of Mississippi, but just and another thing that I just can't understand is, well, yeah, I do. I'm lying. I ask people if they're 2 years out and they still don't have their needs met, and some of them are really pitiful. A lady's got two kids in her FEMA trailer that they're both really, really sick from the formaldehyde that's 10 times what it should be in the test readings, and she's living in a neighbor's trailer or something. I don't know. Anyway, I ask, what's your church affiliation? And she tells me, and I say, well, have you asked the church for help? And more than once, I get the answer, no, I don't ask them, because they just get all up in your face and they talk nasty and just make, you know, they just...
Ain't worth it.
It's just not worth it. So I just wondered, I just thought I'd call you because my sister told me that you might be able to help me get a house, get back in my house, or get my house built, or kill the mold in my trailer or something, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, and every time I hear that answer, I just say, well, that's pretty Christ-like of them, ain't it? And she said, yeah, well.
Well, you know, the church I was raised in has a family life center with a bowling alley in it.
Mm-mm-mm.
And you don't have to drive far from where that church stands to find people living in shacks.
Mm-hmm.
And people that haven't had a job in 10 years and can't feed their families.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not quite lily white, but it's pretty close to it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I
got to be careful about going out and helping the poor and the sick and stuff because, well, you know, those people.
Yeah, right. Well, I said at the beginning, this isn't, my question isn't necessarily ethnic or racially based. I mean,
you're trying to understand the human condition of the in the Deep South is what it boils down to.
Yeah, I reckon it's sort of like.
Well, you love To Kill a Mockingbird as much as I do, or more so, I think.
Maybe.
Remember when Jim was given Atticus hell because he wouldn't play football for the Methodists?
Mm-hmm.
Because all of his friends, he had buddies, and their daddies was playing football for the Baptists in the annual game, but Atticus was too old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that kind of thing. And there's good-natured ribbing. You know, I've said before, I used to go in for the Wednesday fellowship supper down in the basement of the Baptist church, and one of the deacons would walk in and say, "Well, we got us a little Methodist rain going on out there." "Yeah, brother, what do you mean?" "Just a sprinkle." Because deep in their hearts of hearts, Baptists will tell you that the Methodist sprinkling is insufficient. You must have full immersion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And see what I mean about, you know, head of a pen stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
They dunked our Lord, and you ain't going to sprinkle no water on me and tell me I'm baptized. I'm going under just like Jesus.
When I was a little kid, that's why I left the Baptist church, because it finally dawned on me after sitting there in that congregation and listening to that guy scream for so long every morning, that there was this big old mural behind him. But one day I don't know how I got to go up there to what would be considered, I guess, the altar, and I snuck a peek there, and there was this big old tank full of water, and I went, whoa, no, and I did everything I could to get out of that church. I was only about 6 or 7 years old. I think, you ain't putting me in that tank of water, no way. And I went to the Lutheran church where they just sprinkled, and they had better cookies and Kool-Aid at CYO or whatever. No, not that.
LYO, or, yeah.
Something, youth group, something, and all my friends from school were going there anyway, so I just changed churches because they had better cookies, and, you know, and I didn't donkey in that big old tank of water. Oh, my God. When I ask, I do that ribbing, too, because just to let people know that I'm not totally stupid. When they talk about, I say, "Do you go to church, ma'am?" She says, "Oh, yeah, I don't miss a Sunday." I said, which church you go to? And she tells me, and I say, "Oh, is that a Big Hat church?" And she says, "Yes, ma'am." You got those sisters with them big hats, right? Boy, can they cook. And it kind of breaks the ice and let people know that, you know, okay, we could trust this white girl, you know. So, but it you're right, it's kind of a culture shock, and it's sort of like being in, oh, I don't know, a foreign country where I can sort of understand the English that they're speaking, but I have no idea what their context is, you know. They're not speaking with the kind of slang or the verbal shorthand, and I guess that's what I'm looking for, if I knew the difference between all these people. I mean, I do know the difference, but I just wondered, I guess I'm just stumbling around here babbling now.
No, you're not, and I think it's, I think it's something that probably more time should be spent on, Kate, than probably has been, because that while people need the help and want the help and ache for the help, they also want to be, you know, they don't want to feel like people feel like they're coming to the third world.
Yeah.
Southerners are very, very protective and proud of their culture, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what's so endearing to me, you know, that they're the pride that people have here.
Yeah.
And the abuse they're taking because the governor won't kick the money loose. It's trickling into, I mentioned it to my, where I'm staying, and she's a case manager, and I made some remark last night, and she said, well, she kind of got this look on her face and said, well, we're getting some of it. And so whatever I was saying, she took it as a criticism, and I thought, oh, dear me, I can't even talk at home. So, but it's kind of trickling in little bit, but it's just flooding into the corporate and casino industry. And, I mean, they're just pouring millions and millions. And I read today or heard today that Vicki Scruggs made $3.8 million on the tobacco settlement thing or something. I thought, oh, my God, whatever.
Yeah.
And I got a woman who just needs a grab bar on her bathtub. She had a stroke, and she can't get in and out of her bathtub, and her windows don't fit because the house got leveled, and the windows are out of plumb now. So we talked and laughed for a few minutes, and I said, why don't you get that young of yours, that 32-year-old, to go over to get some duct tape and some plastic and get those windows chinked up and covered up with clear plastic until we can get you some volunteers over there to get the windows in, because your power bill's going way too high. Why don't he just come over and do it? And she said, oh, well, I guess I could ask him. I said, well, feed him then. She said, yeah. I said, he'll do anything for food. She said, yeah, even if it's one piece of chicken. I said, well, then call him back and tell him to go get his butt over and get some duct tape.
Yeah, tell him there'll be two pieces of chicken.
Yeah, really. I mean, I just feel so frustrated because I can only just do little bitty, you know, I'm just chinking the hole, and it just doesn't feel efficient.
But is there anybody down there, Kate, that isn't just chinking the holes? I mean, that's not an excuse. I hope you understand.
No, not at all. Well, yeah, I mean, there are some organizations who are, I mean, everybody's writing the grants for Salvation Army and the governor's money and the Red Cross money, all the disaster relief. They're writing grants as fast as they can and then getting the volunteers in and then getting the materials. And, you know, I mean, but it's so slow. It's been two freaking years, and it's just so slow. And I just don't.
And if you go down there this time next year, Kate, we'll still be having this conversation. I mean, you know that. I know that.
Well, the FEMA trailers are all going, though. So now we're having to deal with, they're going to come and get my FEMA trailer, and the case manager didn't get me a cottage yet. And I called the case manager, and she said, oh, well, I've been busy. I haven't got, so I kind of got mad, and not at her, but just it's just the condition. People are so burned out, and the inefficiency, and the, it's just sad. It's just sad to me. I mean, if we had a whole new crop of case managers, if we had about 90 case managers come in and went to work for all these agencies, we would have much more work done because they've got new energy, new blood, you know, they're not burned out, and we could put these other people to work doing something else, but it's just sad. So, you know, but I just wanted to know about, I thought we, since this was,
prayer meeting, sure.
Prayer meeting, thank you, that this would be a good time to jump in with the questions I have about the differences between the Mennonites and the Church of God in Christ. And
well, the Mennonites they have a relationship, a sort of an offshoot relationship with the Amish.
Yes, they do.
Slightly, I guess maybe slightly more modernized?
I think so, yes.
But very, very, very similar elements of faith and so forth.
We have busloads of both of them coming down.
Church of God and Prophecy? No, I mean, you know, with the whole speaking in tongues, you know, full on rock and roll band behind the preacher.
Yeah.
The focus, you know, anything that falls under the broad general rubric of Pentecostalism is going to be a very, very emotionalized faith. It's not, you know, they value what they call the faith of a child. They're not going to be big students, or not deep students. I mean, they'll sit there and quote scripture at you till they're blue in the face, but they won't understand 10 cents worth of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Well,
I mean, there's so many things. I don't know if we could cover your questions in 3 hours tonight, Kate, because there are literally a million questions. One of which is, you know, are they King James Version people? Are they New Revised Standard Version people? Are they New International Version people?
Oh, I know. Yeah, and are they Nazarenes from North Carolina or Texas? Ooh, buddy, they are different. Ooh, God. The Mennonites come down here in big old, bluebird buses, you know, the big greyhound-like buses, and they travel down and I think probably drive straight through, and then they're housed at a volunteer center where they're going to be working for. and they want work orders, and they want to hit the street. They want to go eat at 6:30 in the morning, and they want to hit the roof at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they work right straight through, and they carry their lunches with them that's provided by the kitchen where they're staying. And they work, and they do not, they just work and work and work and work and work, and then they're down here for like 6 days, and then they go home.
Well, see, that's another one of the religious issues that you're dealing with there. There's the faith crowd, and there's the works crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, the faith crowd, you can't work your way into heaven, brother, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, and ain't none of us going to work hard enough to be good enough to get into heaven. It takes faith. You got to be born again. You got to be born, got to be washed in the blood, son.
But then the
works crowd turns around and says, yeah, but what about what it says in the book of James where it says faith without works is dead?
Mm-hmm. And occasionally, if I can get a read on the person, I will say something like, no, honey, I'm blood bought. They just smile and go, oh, okay. You know, like they look at me like, why don't you act like it? And I just have to learn to. It's just like doing a dance. It's a finely tuned play.
Well, you know, but with any of these people, there are some basic rules. You know, when you stub your toe, you don't holler, God damn it. Because ain't none of them take kindly to taking the Lord's name in vain, even though that's not taking the Lord's name in vain. That's what they think it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do because I'm funny. I mean, they tolerate me because I'm humorous and I have the resources and I get along with them and I can talk shit with them, you know. I can talk about fried chicken and do you put crab in your gumbo and,
And do you know where they sell the Kaneka sausage, right?
How do you spell Kaneka sausage? Yeah, I don't.
I'm going to break you with that.
No, you won't. Because I'm doing it just to piss you off.
Yes, you are.
my friend in Arizona, my friend Georgia is the librarian, and I always say library, and she gets so mad. She said, someday you're going to be applying for a job. And
it's
you're
like
so
fingernails across a chalkboard, do you understand? I mean, I've got like 4 pounds of Kaneka sausage left in my freezer that I hoard.
Oh,
and I bring it out for, you know, I mean, if I make a pot of gumbo, you know, I'll take one little quarter pound part of a link and slice it into paper thin ribbons just to have the flavor.
I know. And my friend here uses it so liberally, I think, oh my God, she wastes so much money. We're not even savoring the taste. We're just eating these big old chunks of sausage.
Darn right. Oh, you should try it on a grill. You know, it's a fairly small operation. I called them once to see if I could get them to ship me some, and they said maybe in the dead of winter.
Mm-hmm.
But they really do hickory smoke it, and I've found nothing like it anywhere.
Where do they make it?
Greenville, Alabama.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Or maybe maybe Evergreen. I can't remember.
I tell people, I mean, they just to introduce myself and into the conversation, I say, yeah, I'm a foreigner. I talk funny, and they kind of chuckle like, oh, that's what I was thinking, but I wasn't going to say it. And I said, I'm so foreign, I put sugar in my cornbread, not my tea. And then they laugh, and that breaks the ice, too. So, I'm learning to go along. And,
right, because we all understand that if God had meant sugar to be in cornbread, he would have called
it
cake.
He called it cake, I know. So I guess I don't have many answers about how to go into my next meeting in the morning at 8:30 about who this person is and whatever, but at least I took up 30 minutes of prayer meeting without politics. How'd I do?
No, you done good. And you know what? I think you need to give a reward to yourself, by the way. Never mind New Orleans, but when Mardi Gras time comes, slip over to Mobile and enjoy the real one.
Oh, yeah, that's where it started, huh?
Very first.
And it's
in the New World. I mean, that includes I believe Carnival in Rio.
Yeah, that's what I read. That's another question I have I am not even reading the chat room. I don't even know who's paying attention. The Mardi Gras, why don't I see is it a religious thing? I don't see a whole lot of black folks doing Yaha, acting crazy Mardi Gras stuff. Not in Pascagoula.
That's not entirely surprising.
Is it because it's so heathen and so, you know, what you have to do for beads, you know, and
it's naked
and drunk and stuff.
But that's not Mardi Gras.
I know it isn't, but that's.
I mean, that's what if you want to see. You want to see a real Mardi Gras? Go next door to Mobile, there's parades and there's floats and there's masked balls and there's all the various and sundry societies, and it's still largely segregated. The reason you don't see the African American celebration is because they do their own and you're not invited.
Okay. Yeah.
You're going to make me load music now. But there are various and sundry societies that were named after neighborhoods.
Oh yes, I know that. I'm aware of that.
And go read sometime the Louis Armstrong's Mardi Gras story.
Okay.
And you'll go kind of.
Yeah. I know that, and I'm not really much into party and big crowds and that Yaha stuff. I went to the Pascagoula parade last year. I don't know that I'll even be down here for a couple, 3 weeks before Mardi Gras, before the parades happen. But it just seems so excessive, and big crowds just bore me. I'd rather sit back and take notes on and treat it more like a social lab, you know. That's what I do in airports. I guess I could head over to Mobile, but then you got parking, and then you got to walk, and then you got, oh God, and then it's too hot, and then it rains, and whiny, have cheese with that wine. So anyway, I've studied religions with really well-informed, well-read professors and teachers, but until you... I don't know any of them that ever lived in the Deep South that could tell me the difference between the food at Church of God and Christ and the Presbyterian table. You know,
The food. The food's all going to be wonderful.
No doubt. I know that. Yeah, but I mean, it's something that people just have to experience. And I popped off on a discussion group today. They were going nay 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 about the money that was being spent in quadrillion. Somebody inflated an F to a quadrillion figure or something, and then people are flashing back in the discussion group about that you know, more money has been spent in the Katrina. And I said, I just wrote back and said, until you've been here. Or the guy said, don't you know that's tongue-in-cheek? And I just said, you know, until you've been here and done it.
Nothing's funny.
Then you can complain and grin with your tongue in your cheek. Until you've been here, you can't do that. I'm afraid to go back and see what anybody said. So, anyway, well, thank you for the world religion lecture. You did good.
Well, there wasn't much to it, I'm afraid. There was no there, Kate.
And it would be my hope.
But then again, that's the way I feel about, you know, the religions. So.
Yeah, right. Well, it would be my hope that people would call in and try to give their perspective about some of the questions that I have about some of the cultures that I'm encountering down here. That would be really much more interesting than Romney's underwear and Giuliani's diamond dresses and sequins. And
oh, come on, you gotta love the dress.
Hillary's I don't even know what we're talking about. I just hear people talking about it, and you know, and Hillary.
Oh, I'll have to send you a picture sometime.
Okay, fine. Anyway, well, I hope other people call in.
I got a bunch of blinking lights. I don't know if there's anybody behind them anymore, but yeah, we'll find out.
Let's go take care of those blinking lights. And thanks, y'all, for the tolerating me the last taking up. Damn, it's time for music, Bob. Anyway, I'm out of here, son. Go.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Bye.
Okay, let's find out if there's anybody's here. Hi, who have I got?
Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Oh, nothing much. How you doing?
Doing good.
Yeah, I can totally relate to what the lady was saying in your previous call. It was an education for me growing up, being from New York, and being Episcopalian, which I think... other than a few cities in the South, is kind of looked down upon.
Looked down upon, just sort of what is mainstream in the rest of the world is wildly exotic in other areas.
Yeah.
We referred to them growing up as whiskey Piscopals.
Oh, yeah, drinking Episcopalians.
Yeah.
Which I got a lot of, but, hey, I wouldn't argue with that because it's not uncommon in my household to have martinis after church, so, hey.
Man, you bring me in from a service around here, make it a double.
Okay, sure. Sure. And that's a West Indian thing, too, to have drinks after church.
And I think that's probably the sanest part of a Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah. Probably a Saturday night, too.
I'm showing my biases again, Kevin, but, what are you going to do?
Yeah. One thing I wanted to point out about Giuliani,
mm-hmm.
is the reason why he's campaigning in Florida so hard.
What's that?
Well, when it all implodes on him, he won't have Florida go with his mansion in Palm Beach.
Oh, so, yeah, just drive across the street and you're home.
Exactly. It's going to end and it's going to begin and end right there in Florida.
Well, I hope so. I mean, some of these guys have got to bail out pretty soon. I mean, I thought it was... Yeah, to be honest, I wish Biden and Dodd had not bailed out right after Iowa. I understand money is money, but and you can't afford the staff anymore, but Dodd was talking good stuff, and so was Biden.
Yeah, but Biden pretty much, once he did the clean comment about Barack Obama.
Yeah.
That pretty much was over.
Well, Biden, it's hard to get Biden's foot out of his mouth, especially with the other one in there in the first place. But Chris Dodd, sort of his candidacy was gave him a little bit more of a bully pulpit to talk about things like the telecom immunity business and his heroic stand in late December that put the kibosh on it, despite the best efforts of Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to bend over and grab his ankles for the telecom companies. It was heroic, and I thought he was able to get some of his information out to the American people a little more readily by being a candidate. And frankly, Mark Levin said in the last hour that, in his show, he said, people, candidates steal ideas from each other. And what happens is once that candidate field collapses, and now that it's clear that the major network gatekeepers have decided that they don't want to hear any more of Dennis Kucinich's wild-eyed radical liberal ideas, the oxygen gets sucked out of the room.
Yeah, well, like you said before, the worst thing they can do to you is not pay attention to you.
Yeah.
And it's like, bad press is better than no press, and this is what John Edwards and Kucinich are victims of.
Precisely.
I don't know what to make of Edwards, because for a while there, I had a feeling he may just pull it off. And then it's kind of like... I guess South Carolina would be the deciding factor.
Yeah, I think so. Of course, I don't like seeing any state get to be the deciding factor, and I'm kind of leery of making that declaration with regard to anyone, Kevin, because supposedly New Hampshire was going to be the deciding factor, and if Senator Clinton lost, she was going to be out, she was going to be on the mat, she was going to be down for the count, blah 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 blah. This is one of those that I aim at the media. Who do they think they are to empower two states to make decisions for the rest of us?
Well,
I mean, do I have to move to Iowa or New Hampshire in order for my damn vote to count?
No, it's not that. It's just, I think, both of these states are, I think, very, not New Hampshire, but Iowa... as far, not racially, but like politically diverse, where you have very arch conservatives and very liberal and somewhere in between. You have so many interests in those two states in a relatively, and the same thing for New Hampshire. Again, they're not racially diverse, but you have a lot of political interests in those states.
Well, yeah, you do. But even so, the people who come out for the Iowa caucuses are a teeny tiny minority of the voters there.
Oh.
You know, because they're not going to, there'll be a lot more voters come out, I would warrant, for the general election. So
oh,
one wonders if you can even get a good statistical handle on what it looked, you know, on what voter trending was in a place like Iowa. New Hampshire, it's a dog and pony show. It's a small state in which it really does make the candidates get personal with the voters, and that's nice because you know, they're sort of fine tuning their candidacy and they're having to actually be human and press the flesh. Old style politic, and I understand all of that,
sure.
but this is the huge objection. I don't necessarily know that Iowa and New Hampshire speak for me.
Well, they definitely don't speak for me, but I think it's kind of good that these candidates are forced to go to, especially New Hampshire, Iowa. But New Hampshire, where, you know, New Englanders, I like New Englanders because, you know, they're not easily impressed people by flash. They, you know, you have to have some substance behind you. And, you know, when I spent some weeks up there, you know, this past summer, besides Minnesota, which was New Hampshire, you better have some substance to you. You know, they don't go for the flash and all that. And I think that's why, out of all the Republican candidates, and, you know, I can understand why McCain came out on top, because as far as New Englanders are concerned, the rest of them are full of crap. And this was the least of all the evils that the Republicans had to offer, which is McCain. And you know what? I agree with them.
Well, you know, Mark said in his show that he fears McCain most of all because he thinks that McCain could get the most in the way of Democratic votes. And he's probably right.
Oh, yeah. Well, he is absolutely right. Don't forget, New Hampshire people are independent. They're neither Democrat or Republican. So they're going to do something crazy like that.
Yeah. So, you know, again... But my beef isn't my beef isn't the people of New Hampshire. It's the process.
Oh yeah, all right.
And I think, you know, I really like the idea of taking 6 weeks, dividing 6 into 50, and having a rotating basis where there's no guarantee for anybody getting a shot at any time. It's random every 4 years, and you give the primary candidates, be they Republican or Democrat, 6 weeks to hit 50 states and take your best shot.
Oh, yeah. You know, and the thing is, you know, with McCain, as crazy as he may be, and I think he has sold out, honestly, but back in 2000, had Gore lost to McCain, would you have minded so much?
I would have minded.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be like the way Bush.
But I don't think McCain would have lost. I don't think Gore would have lost to McCain, because I don't think McCain would have had the machine in place to dummy up the election as Karl Rove and the Bush crime syndicate did.
Oh yeah, well, McCain is somewhat an honorable man, even though I think he sold out to it. You know.
A lot of the objections to John McCain have, for the most part, come from his own party. You know, the right wing weirdos who sit in lawn chairs in the middle of the desert and put 4.5 by 14 scopes on Mexicans coming across the border. They're mad at him because he wants to give them amnesty instead of hanging them. Dang it! On the other hand, however, Kevin. I don't know. It hasn't seemed to get the play that I would hope it would have when he stood up in New Hampshire a few days ago and said, "I don't care if we're in Iraq for 5 years or 50. Make it 100 years. I don't care."
Well, that's him playing off to his base in Arizona. You have to understand, Arizona is a huge military-industrial complex.
But that's in New Hampshire.
Still, He wants to keep his senator's seat.
No, I don't think he's in any danger there, is he?
You're always in danger of losing your seat.
Well, yeah, true. There's two ways to run an election, unopposed and scared. I understand that.
Yeah, but especially in states where there's a huge industrial complex like Arizona, if you don't dance to their tune, forget it. You can kiss your senatorial seat goodbye. You know, in sum, I just think, in all honesty, the Republicans have, the way they're running this election, period, is that they've thrown in the towel. They know the Bush family has ruined their party for this time around, and they're trying to set it up that, in such a way that, okay, they're setting it up to lose, but if they're going to lose, they want to lose small. And this is why they're pushing Clinton, Hillary, and Barack Obama. And they're either lose small or...
Well, see, but I think that based on the industry that they have built since 1991, that they know that their best chance to win is against a female, or B, an African American.
Yeah.
If they could run against an African American female,
then better.
Game on.
Yeah, because again, the other night I said, you know, Barack Obama, if he ever wins the nomination, they are going to, he's going to know what it is to get gang raped and be bleeding out of every orifice, because they're going to look into everything.
Yeah, sure.
And there are people out there, and Barack Obama, I don't particularly like him personally. I think he's an elitist, and, you know, he there's some dirt on him, trust me. But I just think...
Well, there's dirt on everybody.
Dirt on,
I mean, let's be candid about that. The question is, to whom will it stick? And it's the old Reagan Teflon factor.
Yeah, exactly. But Barack Obama...
But Barron, wait. Let me just flesh that out a little further. And the question of to whom it sticks, Kevin, is not determined by the candidate, but is determined instead by the media.
Exactly.
I've got a copy of a column here in front of me that was authored by, geez, I think she won allegedly won a Pulitzer Prize from the New York Times, you know, your hometown newspaper.
Yeah.
Headline from Maureen Dowd: Can Hillary cry her way back to the White House? And I read that, and again, not because I'm a Hillary supporter, I'm not, but I see this kind of tawdry, pathetic, the politics as reality television typing, passing for writing, and I just want to bang my head against a door.
Well,
another reporter, listen to this, another reporter joked, that crying really seemed genuine. I'll bet she spent hours thinking about it beforehand. Haw, 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 haw.
Oh, yeah, you know, but they hate Hillary, and I think what they're doing with the whole crying thing is, again, they are publicly raping her. And again, I am no huge Hillary Clinton supporter either, but wrong is wrong.
And see, Maureen Dowd puts all of this down. What do you want to bet none of these reporters exist who said this stuff? And she just made this stuff up out of whole cloth, because she hates, she loathes, she despises. I mean, she vomits a little bit in the back of her throat every time she thinks about Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
And her writings betray that. She puts words in another reporter's mouth who says, we're at war. Is this how she'll talk to Kim Jong-il? Huh? What? We're at war with Kim Jong-il? I missed the memo.
Oh, you know, I just don't understand the press. You know, I've worked for a magazine at one point, and it's just, a lot of it is about talking out of two sides of your face. You know, where a lot of them, and, you know, a reporter is about having a Rolodex and having access to these people. And they're going to say, and whoever's in charge, you know, Washington now is run by the conservative think tanks. That's who's in charge, and they'll always have to suck up to them, plain and simple.
I tell you what, I keep saying it, and I hope I'm not wearing anybody out. I'm not looking forward to the next 11 months. I'm just not.
I am, because I'll know whether or not I should be true. Yeah, I am, because, again, I just think, you know, whoever I feel sorry for whoever becomes president next.
Oh, yeah, because they're in for the light, and I don't, yeah.
Democrat or Republican.
Well, I don't feel sorry for the Republican, because the Republican will think that everything is just hunky-dory.
Yeah, well, the thing is, this is like a rerun of when, you know, nobody, this is like a rerun. Whoever is president next time around is going to be a one-termer. I have that feeling right there. Because this country has not been this divided up since the Civil War.
I think you're right. I think you're right, Kevin.
And I just think it's going to be like a Andrew Johnson presidency. I really do.
I think, we tend to forget in all the presidential discussion that there will also be a congressional election, and there's no guarantee that the Democrats hang on to their majority.
Probably.
Especially given the way they have behaved in the last year?
Probably not, but then again, look at how the Republicans behaved for the 5 years before that.
Oh, but...
Or the 15
But again, it's a question
that.
Of who it sticks to.
Exactly, and that's the problem that I have, you know, as bad as, you know, and believe you me, I am totally disappointed in Pelosi, you know.
But I don't want to trade her for John Boehner.
Exactly. Exactly. And the thing is, I understand, you know, the D.C. cocktail circuit. You know, it's a nice life. You don't want to give it up.
Yeah. Good booze, good shrimp. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like great shopping in Georgetown. I understand that. But come on, have some kind of integrity.
I know. Kevin, I got a bunch of them lit up. Whether there are people there or not, I don't know, but I certainly enjoy it. Hang in there. I appreciate both your input and your attitude. But I mean, I don't know. I may be wearing one of those fun little white dinner jackets with the sleeves that tie in back by the time this is all over.
Don't, please don't.
Take care.
All right.
Bye now. Our good friend Kevin, now of Brooklyn. All right, let's see if there's any people on board. Nope, you're a busy signal. Okay, how about you? Mm-mm. Nope. 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 You know, it's six-line telephone system, and you guys won't have... Well, never mind. Yeah, Lottie, I may need to borrow your spiffy white dinner jacket with the sleeves that tie in the back. This, Maureen, did you see this? This is from the New York Times. From today, can Hillary cry her way back to the White House? It's astonishing. And it's, well, okay, let's go to the phones. Someone may have hung up prematurely. Yeah, hi, this is Bob. Who is this?
Susan.
Oh, hey, Susan.
By the way, the reason you're having nobody there is because we're having problems getting through.
What do you mean?
I keep getting the extension you're trying to call.
Oh, well, yeah, because I had all six lines engaged, and as a consequence of that, you get rolled into the voicemail.
Anyway, the Maureen Dowd thing.
Yeah, you read it?
Oh, yeah.
Throw up a little bit in the back of your throat?
Well, in a way, but it also kind of... it occurred to me that there's a whole lot of fear in the media. Because, okay, consider what the media, along with the Republican Congress, did to the Clintons. I mean, they really did a number on them.
Well, this is the same woman who perpetuated the stupid lies about Al Gore and Love Story and Al Gore, you know, and inventing the internet and all of that foolishness.
Yeah, and you know, the whole media thing with Vince Foster and the whole nine yards, and they did this, they hunted the Clintons through his entire presidency, because I'm sure they were secure in the idea, hey, they can't do anything about it. Well, guess what? If she gets back in the White House, gets into the White House, it's payback time, honey.
Yeah, but how's she going to pay back a columnist?
Easy.
I mean, it's certainly pre me and probably pre you, but there was a Washington columnist by the name of Drew Pearson, whom Harry Truman referred to as an SOB, and Drew Pearson in his column then started the SOB club and invited people to join.
Yeah,
you cannot, I don't care if you're the President of the United States, Susan, you cannot win a war as the saying goes, with a man who buys ink by the barrel.
You used to couldn't. Tell that to the Washington Press Corps of today. All you have to do is deny access.
Yeah, but see, we're talking about Democrats here. Okay,
I'm sure Hillary's learned a few things at the hands of the Republicans.
She probably has, but she knows and it's a lesson that she is being taught, and it's a lesson that Obama's being taught too. Okay, let's be clear about this. This isn't all Hillary all the time. They are being taught that, you know, this is how it is now. You cross us, and it's going to get 1,000 times worse.
Mm-hmm. There's also this. She has been through the worst, the absolute worst the press could dish out. Utter worst. What more can they do to her short of cut her in her throat?
She doesn't want to ask that question because they'll work on an answer.
Now
the fact...
publicly humiliated.
Oh, yeah, let's see. Speaking of publicly humiliated, let's share this. You've read the column, so you'll recognize this, Susan. She won her Senate seat after being embarrassed by a man. She pulled out New Hampshire and saved her presidential campaign after being embarrassed by another man. She was seen as so controlling when she ran for the Senate that she had to be seen as losing control, as she did during the Monica scandal, before she seemed soft enough to attract many New York voters. How does that pass for trenchant political commentary? I mean, if I was grading this, Susan, I'd say, okay, honey, we've got the paragraph now. Now we need some. We got bones. Now we got to put meat on them. How was she embarrassed by a man? How was she embarrassed by another man? With regard to New Hampshire, okay? How was she seen as so controlling? Yeah, you know, give me some facts. Give me some figures here.
Yeah, it's pure speculation and pure green-eyed jealousy.
Maureen Dowd wants to be Hillary Clinton?
Maureen Dowd wants Hillary Clinton's accomplishments? What has Maureen Dowd ever been but a second fiddle to the other I can't remember her name. She died a while back.
Who, Molly Ivins?
Yeah. Maureen Dowd's never been anything but a second fiddle to Molly Ivins.
Well, I...
She never will be.
She's not as good a writer as, but she's certainly in a far higher and more vaunted position. I mean, this woman writes a column 2-3 times a week. Do you have any idea what she makes for a living for doing that?
Yeah, and she knows very well who has the respect, and it's not her.
There was a whiff of Nixonian self-pity about her choking up.
Oh, give me a break.
Nixon?
Nixon, give me a break.
This is... Would they... And she conjures Muskie?
Oh,
in this column?
You have to conjure Muskie. They were doing that last night.
That's what it was all about, was trying to swab her with the musky brush, because you know musky choked up a little bit, and that was sufficient to run him completely out of the campaign when he was poised.
Yeah, he went to his grave saying that those weren't tears; that was melting snow.
Yeah.
And what gets me, first of all, did you hear the Rachel Maddow line last night?
No, I didn't.
Okay. She said that what Talking Points memo was saying caused the shift that gave the win to Hillary was Chris Matthews.
Oh, the Chris Matthews stalker business?
Yeah. The way he was constantly beating up on her. And, you could just see him, you know, his face just went totally blank. It was priceless. But one thing that's really, really starting to bother me, I was listening to Stephanie Miller's show.
Mm-hmm.
People are they're accusing the Clintons of rigging the election.
I saw something from Brad Blog that said that all of the polling on New Hampshire was rock solid, with the exception of Obama and Clinton. And that, you know, that was raising some eyebrows.
Yeah, except I saw an article also on the net by Zogby, and he said the trends toward, you know, just before the polls opened, were trending towards Hillary. There was a big shift starting, but he didn't have enough to go public with it.
You know, let me try a little radicalism here, Susan. What do you say we put all the pollsters in a bag and throw them in the Potomac?
Not a bad idea. What bothers me is if every time somebody comes up with one of these accusations, the Republicans just chortle.
Sure, because they're going to use that in after
after
whoever our nominee becomes our nominee, that will be used. We're basically doing we're doing the Republicans whoever their nominee is, we're doing his homework for him, and we're doing it in classic Democratic fashion.
Yeah,
we're eating our own before we ever get to the dinner table.
Yeah, I'm not Hillary supporter. I'm not an Obama supporter. But Obama.
I'll make it clear. I will not vote for Hillary Clinton in my primary.
Yeah.
I won't do it. Can't make me.
I'll vote for Kucinich in the primary.
Depending on how things look, it's kind of weird for me. My first impulse would be to vote for Dennis Kucinich, because Dennis Kucinich stands for what I believe in. Period.
Yeah.
But I've been given a lot of thought.
General election?
Wait. Where the primary is concerned, one, I don't get a vote till May, so my vote is ceremonial.
Yeah, so is mine.
But second, and I'm trying to sort this out ever since I got the email last night saying, you know, we must support Obama over John Edwards, because if Hillary is the nominee, we will have a Republican president come November 8th. And I'm giving that a lot of thought, but the question for me is, what if what if John Edwards tightens it up? What if after South Carolina we've got 1-1-1 or 1-2-1 or 2-1-1? What if this race does tighten up? What if John Edwards actually does campaign in the South among Democrats for the primary?
Yeah.
And what if he does start to pull even? Because, frankly, look, it's just this simple. Illinois Obama and basically New York Clinton are not going to resonate, perhaps. I don't know. Maybe the women's vote will be enough to carry Hillary in the Democratic primaries in places like Tennessee and Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia. But John Edwards, you know, it's a little bit like what I was talking about with Kate earlier, Susan. John Edwards speaks the language.
Yeah. That he does.
And whether it's the cadences or the code or whatever, he speaks the language. What do I do in May if it's tight?
Is it a stop
Hillary vote, or is it a situation where I vote for the person I believe will make the best president? That's one of the things I hate the most out of this whole stinking process, is that I struggle every day to maintain some level of my idealism. And I don't mean idealism in a negative sense. I mean it in a very positive sense, because I'm trying to set an example for my kids.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what happens in May for me.
Here's the thought. And I know this is probably never going to happen, because I understand they can't stand each other. But let's face it, JFK and Lyndon didn't like each other either. Consider what would happen with a Clinton-Obama ticket.
Well, that would be the best of both worlds. But by the same token, it would again be it would provide tremendous fodder for the other side. This is a very icky, bloody business. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the reason I'm mentioning it is because Obama has one thing that stands out above everything. If you listen to that man make a speech, he sounds like Bobby Kennedy. And he talks like Jack.
Yeah, sure.
And that makes him the Pied Piper. Now, Hillary has the hands-on...
Now, wait, stop. Can I stop you for a minute, Susan?
Sure.
Hillary doesn't have any hands-on. Now, you and I may have to agree to disagree on this, but she doesn't have any hands-on. She has held her first ever elected political office since the year 2000.
Yeah.
She has utterly zero hands-on. And I'm not trying to do the other side's work for him, but the fact of the matter is she did not have a national security clearance when she was the first lady. No first lady does. It's no slur on her to say that. She didn't. And, I object.
I'm saying she has the machine.
Yeah, okay, but I object to being lied to and being told that she's been, fighting the bad guys for 36 years.
No. I wasn't even talking about that.
No, but she is, and I call BS.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. But let's face it, Barack's done his own version thereof.
Sure. Now, meanwhile, just to provide a little bit of counterpoint, a little bit of perspective, Dennis Kucinich has been in politics since he was 26 years old. He's a 60-year-old man. Do the math.
You're telling me. As far as I'm concerned, the man who should be president is Dennis Kucinich.
But, don't pee on my foot and tell me it's raining.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
You and I both know that man will never be president because he's short and he's plain.
At this point in time,
not the Pied Piper.
At this point in time, Hillary Clinton has 7 years in elected, well, 6 years, six and a half, 7.5 years in elected office, more than I do, and more than you do.
Yeah, but what she does have is Bill's machine.
To some extent, yes.
Yeah, and that's what I was talking about. But if you combine the two. Now, I'm not saying, let's face it, it's never going to happen because, let's face it, they don't get along at all. But wouldn't it be just, I don't think the Republicans could handle that.
I don't know. There are some Republicans who might say, Susan, that that's the best of all possible worlds. Because you get a woman and a minority to scare America with.
True. But then you also, that man, that minority is also the Pied Piper. How old are you, Bob?
Soon be 45.
Okay. I actually remember Jack Kennedy. An entire generation sat up and accepted one man's marching orders. the entire bloody generation did it. When we hadn't wanted, we did. Our whole
but am I the only one who thinks that...
Don't trust anybody over 30. That man said, ask not what you can do, and we said, okay, what can we do?
Yeah, I know.
And
the next part of this conversation is the dashing of the American dream.
Yes, I know. But he's the first person since the Kennedy brothers who can talk like them, who sounds like them. What has me terrified is that some creep is going to make him end up like them.
Well, I...
Message to Barack Obama, whatever your detail tells you to do, you do it, and you do it fast.
Yeah, no open-top convertibles. We know that.
Yeah, you do what that Secret Service detail tells you to do because they are trying to keep you alive.
And I think of all the candidates out there, he is the most at risk for obvious reasons. You know, I'm getting our buddy Cindy has written in and told me as far as the primary is concerned in May, vote my conscience and not my politics.
That's what I'm going to do.
But my conscience merges with my politics because my conscience drives my politics. If my conscience wasn't involved with my politics, I'd just say screw it and be a Republican and be out there doing evil, working for some corporation, grubbing away
and trying
to pile up as much money as humanly possible.
Yeah, exactly.
My conscience informs my politics, so there are hard decisions to be made in that voting booth.
Yeah, you and I suffer from the same problem. We've got a conscience. And so, therefore, we're destined to be one of the members of the poor because we won't go out and screw our fellow people.
No, I don't feel like it's a matter of destiny. If it was destiny, and this is a little bit of unmitigated horn tooting on my part. It really is. Because I've got enough education and skill and intelligence to make any corporate master happy. But I have a real problem having a master.
Yeah. It's a matter of choice. I've got standards, I do, and I'm, by God, not going to turn into a whore at my age.
Yeah, see, I've already done my whore.
The corporate version or the kind that walks the street. Either way, I would be lousy at it.
Yeah, well, you know, you could ask Agnes about my former life, and she would tell you that I was, if I was still doing what I had been doing, I don't think we'd still be married.
And you'd probably
because
be having a heart attack from the stress.
I'm hard enough to live with as it is, but I was a genuine ass.
Oh no, not you.
And I'm sure that there are people out there going, well, like, what? How's that different from how you are now, Bob? But I mean, pretentious. I look back on me and I just. Ugh.
Well, Agnes must have spotted something she figured was worth redeeming.
Well, she did, and there were changes. When I stopped doing evil and being evil, being around me proved to be less evil. So, you know, but yeah, I don't know what happens in May. I'd like to vote for Kucinich, but if May rolls around and John Edwards has a fighting chance, how do I not?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to wait and see. My inclination right now is to go with Kucinich.
Yeah, and mine too. I mean, if May rolls around and it's a lead pipe cinch, and by then, because by the time May gets here, I remember when Kerry was running, he came to Charleston on the night that he got sufficient primary votes to make him the nominee and celebrated being the Democratic nominee in Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, it's pure math. So if it's all said and done, I get to vote pure conscience. in our May primary, and I would like, you know, I'd like for our elected representatives to at least pay a little bit of attention to those of us who are kind of interested in the process. And, you know, if the whole damn world is going to make sure that all of our primaries happen between January the 3rd and, you know, February the 15th, then I damned well want to get to vote then, too. Because I am sick and tired, Susan, sick and tired.
Of not having it mean anything.
Well, of not having a voice in my party's nominating process.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You and me both. I'm in the same boat. What I would like to see is a national primary.
You know, I'm going to have to put this theory of mine in writing. Because it makes more sense than anything. A national primary, I don't think. Well, you know, why not? You know, let everybody go. But the idea of staggering it, you know, 6 weeks, 6 into 50 goes, you know, eight states a week, 8 1/3 states per week. That's manageable. And at the beginning of the process, if primaries begin on January 3rd, then in June of the previous year, just like when they draw the lottery, we've got all the bubbling balls in the thingamajig, and we sit there and we draw out group of eight, group of eight, group of eight, group of eight, you know, on and on, and then group of 10. Or group of, yeah, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there's no rule that says nobody can be in the first group. It's all strictly random. And you know what? If it's Oregon and Florida and Maine and Arizona are in the first group of eight, you know, tough. You don't like it, don't run. This is the presidency. How bad do you want it?
Yeah.
I mean, this is no picnic. The process as it exists now.
Yeah.
But it would afford different segments of the country the opportunity to have the first voice. Because frankly, and I'm not trying to be a jerk, I don't think that New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, and Iowa are necessarily a representative sample of the country.
They're not by a long shot. For one thing, you don't have any huge cities in there.
Yeah.
Do you?
No, you don't.
Unless you count Vegas, big deal. Most of Vegas's population is transient anyway; they can't vote.
Well, I was about to say the very same thing. You know what would happen if California was the first primary?
Oh boy, Katie barred the door.
then candidates, you know, okay, California is over with, because you know some people have a political strategy that says if I can take New York, Pennsylvania, California, Washington, Oregon, Florida, Ohio, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And screw the rest of the country. Well, I don't like being a screwee, Susan.
You and me both.
So, yeah. Well, there's another blinking light, and if there's somebody still there, I want to talk to them.
Okay.
This has been a fun one, Susan.
Yeah, you give my luck to Agnes.
I sure will. You take care. Hey to Donald.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Hi, who have I got?
Hello.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Just fine. I'm very happy with last night's outcome of the primary.
Well, I'm glad you are.
And I think Mrs. Clinton will be an excellent president. And I can't wait to vote for her in the primary and in the general election should she get the nominee.
Well, I will be happy to go and select her name in November if that is the situation that arises.
Because, I mean, she is, as far as I'm concerned, as far as her national security clearance is concerned, she's had one for how many years?
She never had. I don't know if she's got.
She has one now.
She has some level of one now as a member of the Senate.
Well, I have a national security clearance, Bob. You ever had one?
Nope, never sought one.
Well, I have.
Not running for president either.
Well, anyway, that's no problem there.
But I'm also not on the campaign trail saying that I've got 36 years of experience in office when I've only held office for, you know, 7.5 years.
Well, I don't know anything about that. All I know is that I think that she certainly proved her mettle in many very harsh situations, and she's to be respected for the things she's done.
Okay, well, just to be fair, what are the
situations? Her husband pulled on her and still stick with her, him.
What are the situations in which she's proved her mettle,
Jim? That's no mean feat.
Jim, what are the situations in which she's proved her mettle?
Excuse me?
What are the situations in which she has proved her mettle?
And proved her mettle?
Yeah,
number
you said
one, she had to live with Bill Clinton for 8 years and to deal with a lot of stuff there and then deal with that. And she is a very intelligent, astute person, just as intelligent as he and the rest of them. And when you look at John Edwards, now John Edwards says, well, when he gets to be president, he's going to take away the congressional staffs and all their health benefits. He can't even do that. He's making promises he can't even keep, and the guys are trying to get universal health care. Looks pretty, sounds pretty, but it ain't pretty.
Okay, so in terms of Senator Clinton proving her mettle, 8 years with Bill Clinton is presidential experience.
A lot of insight that a lot of them do not have. That's for sure. And I just happen to believe in the person. I think he's done a good job as senator. And I'll tell you something else about Mr. Huckabee, and you might find this to be interesting. I just received a phone call from a Baptist minister.
Oh, dear.
In South Carolina. And don't say that. If you have problems with Baptists, that's your problem. I don't have problems with Baptists. This man told me himself, this is what he said. Number one, his church has pulled away from the Southern Baptist Convention because he said they are too right-wing.
Good, good.
Number two, he told me also, he said, Jim, when I was called to preach, I was called to preach, and I was not called to do anything else. And he said, if this Mr. Huckabee were the genuine article and were genuinely called upon by God to preach, he would not be seeking the power that is associated with the presidency.
That is as profound a statement about Mike Huckabee as I have heard, Jim.
Well, I thought you might like to hear that.
Because, you know, the ones that I have known, and not just Baptist or Methodist, but the ones that I have known, for the most part, couldn't do anything but preach if they were any good, because it was the literal be all and end all of their existence. Because it was their so called calling.
This was his personal confession, and he just said he could not understand how anybody could use the stuff that he was using to try to gain public office if he were the genuine article in the first place. In other words, this man is basically a false prophet.
And I agree wholeheartedly because, you know, he didn't just spring onto the scene like Athena out of the head of Zeus, Jim. This guy started out with a run for the United States Senate way back when. I mean, he's had tremendous political aspirations. That was followed by a run for the lieutenant governorship of Arkansas, and then he fell. And I don't even know if people can. Yeah, this is probably ancient history to a lot of people. Mike Huckabee fell into the governor's office when Jim Guy Tucker was removed from office.
Right, he did.
And he served as governor for 10 years in Arkansas, wholly by political accident.
Well, Tucker got into some kind of stupid mess. I forgot what it was about then. But it was just some kind of ugliness. But nonetheless, that's how Huckabee got into the governor's seat. But as far as I'm concerned, I think, going back to the Hillary Clinton, I think she is as good as any of the rest of them, if not better. And I just have I think it's time that we have a woman as president, because I have great respect for the abilities of women, and I think it's time that we have one for president. My God, no woman could do any worse than the person we have in there now.
Now, that's where you and I stand together. If we got a test pattern for 4 years, it couldn't be any worse than what we have. And frankly, you know, what I've said time and again, and there are a lot of people out there who disagree with me, Jim, people who say that it'll be a cold day in hell when they vote for another Clinton for another presidency, you know, people who are progressives and liberals and Democrats, it boils down to me to a couple of factors. One, Hillary Clinton is, in fact, better than anybody running for the Republican nomination by about a million, billion, jillion miles.
Well, okay. I think she's got to be up on most of the Democrats, too, Bob.
I don't think
Obama has the experience. He just doesn't have it. I'm sorry.
Well, he's actually.
And I don't think John Edwards has it either.
Now, Jim, to be fair, Barack Obama has been in elected office of one form or another longer than Hillary Clinton has. So he has more elected office experience.
Well, if you know, I don't use that as a measuring stick. I use that about what a person has done and how they behave themselves in other areas of their lives.
Okay, now...
That's not the only measuring stick.
All right.
That's just my opinion, and I'm not going to debate that any further with you.
Okay, well, sure. But with that being the case, Jim... you know, you called here last week, and we had a very in-depth, informative conversation about the evils of Walmart.
About who?
About the evils of Walmart. You had just seen Robert Greenwald's film. Hillary Clinton sat on the board of directors of Walmart, and all of those labor abuses that you were talking about in excoriating Walmart were done while she sat on the board and said not a word about it.
How long ago was this?
Late 80s, early 90s.
A lot's changed in Walmart since she sat on that board, Bob.
But the labor practices haven't.
Well, even some of the labor practices, they've gotten much worse since then.
But they weren't. But the point is, they weren't good then.
Been reported out.
I mean, this is Jim.
Even
this is documented stuff.
I've cited, pointed out how much worse things had gotten over the 90s and into the. New millennia with Walmart.
Largely after NAFTA was passed. And Walmart's supply business began coming out of China.
So I'm sorry, bud, that dog don't hunt.
Well, I'm not hunting.
That dog won't lie hunt.
Well, the fact
that... You can't pin that on her.
You can't pin it on her, but you can certainly ask her about it. Why didn't you urge, you know, you're in the position of power at Walmart, and you say you believe in, organized labor, and you're endorsed by a lot of organized labor groups.
Has anyone asked her that question yet?
Yes, it has been asked, and she won't answer.
Well, sometimes it's best not to answer.
Especially when the answer could be damning, right?
Well, I mean, you know, let he is without sin cast the first stone. If you're trying to find somebody who's absolutely perfect, then good luck.
No, we're not going to have the perfect in this race, not by any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, I could take any candidate you could select, and I could pick them apart just like you can.
What I'm trying to point out, I think a lot of people who call themselves liberals or progressives or, you know, whatever name they use for themselves are mistrustful of her. Because she talks one thing, or is perceived to talk one thing, and
well, I can't think of a
does another.
And done that.
Now she voted to authorize George Bush to start the Iraq War.
So did John Kerry.
And John Kerry's not running.
A lot of people were misinformed by George Bush and his minions.
So, misinformed in what way?
They were misinformed as to what was going on in weapons of mass destruction. The way that thing was sold to the Congress, it was sold to them as a very, very bad bill of goods filled with untruth.
So it was just a lack of perception on her part?
A lack of being given the proper information.
Well, how does that explain the people?
Do you think that George Bush and his minions and people like that, Dick Cheney, are going to allow any type of real oversight into what they were going to do? How many times have I heard you talk about these men and how evil they are?
They are. They absolutely
and
are.
They
but the question... The
what
question,
I say, yes, they hoodwink these people. They pull one over on the American Congress.
Well, how did they manage not to hoodwink all the people who voted against the Iraq War resolution, both in the House and in the Senate?
You have to ask them.
What?
I don't know. I can't see into their souls. I wasn't there. But there were a lot of people who were persuaded by the intelligence provided them. And it has been pointed out in many books that have been written, everybody from A to Z, how that war was misrepresented to the American Congress. And there were some people who, I guess, you know, some people make the right decision and some people are making the wrong decision, but they do so
with the best of intentions.
I mean, I can't blame anybody. I don't know anybody up there who has not made a mistake. I don't know of anybody anywhere who hasn't made a mistake, including the two people who are having this conversation.
Okay.
I say it's time to stop diddling in the past and go forward, and let's try to find something that's going to be good for this country. It's somebody that we can get in there and elect.
Well, like I said, the best
elect, then we can do something.
The best I can do with Senator Clinton is to say that I'll vote for her in November.
Well,
because
you know,
she is better than
right. you say you have no part in your electoral process. Will you vote for Dennis Kucinich in the primary if he's still running? You will have had your say in the issue, will you not?
Right, or John Edwards, or Obama.
But I just don't think that those three. Honestly, the truth is, when Edwards made the statement about he was going to do this, that, and the other with congressional health care, I thought to myself, who are you kidding? You don't even have the authority to do that. And he doesn't. Even if he were elected, he couldn't take their benefits away like that.
I frankly wouldn't want him to. I want America. See, I look at it. I come at things from a different angle, though, Jim. I don't want things taken away from people. I want America to have Cheney care.
My point exactly. And what, you know, even if he were to try, say if John Edwards were elected, if he said, okay, unless you give the American people universal health care, I'm going to take your health care package away. Do you think he would be able to do that? No. And he would simply paralyze himself there on Pennsylvania Avenue for the rest of his term and get nothing done.
Well, the truly easy solution to the whole health care mess is as simple as H.R. 676. The Medicare for All Act. It extends.
I heard you speak about that.
Its primary sponsor is John Conyers. It's been co-sponsored by Dennis Kucinich and a number of others, and it simply extends and expands Medicare to cover everyone in the country.
Well, that is a very good possibility, and I hope that maybe they could do something.
That's one of the things that does bother me about the three remaining people, Jim. The three remaining candidates all have, to one extent or another, the insurance industry still involved in the process, selling policies. Now, everybody knows who gets Medicare, or there are providers. For instance, name a health insurance company, but you know they do some of the management on the stuff, but they aren't out there in charge of whether or not you can be insured or not. And for as long as the current existing failed structure, not failing but failed structure is in place, we're not going to solve that problem. I want the Iraqupation ended as soon as possible.
Well, as soon as it can be done, so it is practical manner as possible. Yes.
My primary concern is getting the troops out safely, because withdrawing from a battlefield is as dangerous or more dangerous than advancing into one.
And that's exactly what Senator Clinton said last night, that she wanted to end the war properly and not in a rout as we were in Vietnam and leaving by the top of the American embassy.
And that's what she said last night. The question,
absolutely,
the question for me is, how do I balance that against her statement that she wanted to keep troops in Iraq like we have in Korea?
Well, then, you know, there may be a necessity of some type of military presence in that area of the world until it stabilizes. Now, that is a distinct possibility.
See, when I hear as soon as practicable or get them out properly, I start thinking about the language from Brown versus Board of Education that said you remember all deliberate speed, Jim?
You want it all here and now. It's not going to happen that way.
I want it to start ending.
Well, let's hope it will very soon. I have no greater love for it than you do.
Yeah, I want, you know, what Churchill called the beginning of the end.
Well, I think you've seen that, because by virtue of necessity, they're going to have other things to do in Afghanistan. What I understand there.
There's no doubt about that. Now,
absolutely,
from,
because I'm
and again, believe. Again, to be clear, Jim, I don't trust any of the Republican nominee or candidates to take so much as a single step toward ending it. I think they all. It's clear that Giuliani and Thompson and the rest of it, Romney. It's clear that they all want to perpetuate that war because they're supported by the kind of people that profit by it. So that it come November, it's gonna be a hard nose holder for a lot of people voting for somebody who might end the war versus someone who has promised you they won't.
Who is person there who's a standard bearer? It certainly will not be. It wasn't for me when I voted for John Kerry last in 2004. But nonetheless, that's just the way I'm wired, you know.
Oh, I understand.
I make my mind up and I go through it, and I realize that I can't have everything that I want, and I realize that I can't have everything here and now. But I realize that you can face gradually, and all come folks who will wait and be patient long enough.
I trust her. I trust her to make the right calls on the Supreme Court.
And as far as I was talking to a Catholic friend of mine last night who doesn't like her. And I said, you believe in marriage and the sanctity of marriage, right? She said, oh, yes. So I said, well, I don't think I can think of anybody in Washington who believes in it more than Hillary Clinton.
Oh, true. True, true. Yeah.
And she said, I can't argue with that. I have a great deal of respect for her. I'm sorry. I do. And, maybe I'm blinded by it, but I don't care. Once I'm loyal to somebody like that, my loyalty very seldom, if ever, wavers.
And you're certainly not alone, Jim. There are obviously a lot of people who feel that way. I simply have grave misgivings about her and about what she can accomplish.
Well, be that as it may seem.
Because whoever gets in there needs two things. One, they need to win themselves. And secondly, they need a cooperative Congress. And to a certain extent, I think we do ourselves a bit of a disservice by focusing so much on the presidential race, when in fact things congressionally are going to stay as they are unless we can get 60 senators. 60 senators.
I think the Congress is going to change a great deal in November.
For the better or for the worse?
Well, I hope for the better. I think America is tired. They're just tired of the same old business as usual, and they're tired of some of the crap that's been going on for the past 8 years. And they're tired of those people who are perpetuating it.
And in the Senate, that's the Republican Party. They've stopped every good piece of legislation that we've sent there.
People are becoming aware of that.
I hope you're right.
Well, I know I'm right. I really believe that. I think it's going to happen. I mean, we can't go on like we're going on. We simply can't.
Because
there are a lot of good people out there who are Baptists, who are Catholics, who are all types of people. And I don't like to see them painted with the same brush as being stupid, ignorant, mouth-breathing, nose-rushing people. That's not fair. And there are a lot of people that can be appealed to. And you're going to have those people if you're going to get your way in November of this year. That's for sure.
Well, in certain segments of the country, I think you're absolutely correct. And that remains to be seen how the Democratic nominee will treat it. You understand, for instance, that Senator Clinton.
I hope they will be treated with respect and with a little more care than they were the last time, and explained.
Well, Senator Clinton, please understand, Jim.
Bibles or their rifles away, and that is a bunch of hogwash.
Well, the Republican National Committee will make that mailing again.
Well, then that's good. Let them make it again, and that will be a mistake.
It worked.
Well, it might. Well, it's not going to work this time. It doesn't have to work if people will address it.
Well, I mean, remember that mailing that you're talking about, that flyer with John Kerry going to get your Bible, was mailed to two states.
I know.
Arkansas and West Virginia, and it was taken for gospel, wasn't it?
Well, it doesn't have to be taken for gospel again. You can repeat. You can profit from mistakes. And sometimes the same strategy does not work always. The same time, sometimes that'll backfire on you.
Well, I'd like to hope that it will.
Well, I have a lot more faith in it, obviously, than you do. So we'll just leave it at that.
It bothers me. It does bother me, though, that as far as the South is concerned, being a Southerner as I am, because I consider West Virginia a Southern state too. It's below the Mason-Dixon line. But the Clinton strategy will be the same Clinton strategy. It will be when the big delegate, you know, peach states, you know, the Floridas, the New Yorks, the Michigan.
You have to have those states. You can't.
You
get
sure?
It
you sure? You sure do. But the thing is, and just pretend that the rest of them don't exist. You know,
no,
the name will be on the ballot, but concede the Deep South to the Republicans.
I don't think that's going to happen.
It happened in 2000. Well, let's see. It happened in 92, 96, 2000, and 2004 for the Democrats.
Well, maybe it won't happen in 2008 because maybe they'll see that they might need some of those people. And maybe those people down there might see, hey, you know, maybe we need somebody to make a change. It's not all hunky-dory down there either, Bob.
Oh, I know it's not. I've been there fairly recently.
Well, okay.
Bad and getting worse.
Well, I think that people down there are intelligent enough to realize when they've been hoodwinked and when they've been fooled.
There was a political race just a year or so ago, and down in Alabama, both the Democrats and the Republicans were running on their conservative family values.
Well,
you know,
I think they've seen exactly, as of late, just how genuine some of their family values are. And what real conservatism is. And it does not match with what they think it is.
No, it doesn't match. And
no, it simply doesn't. And those people down there have a lot more sense than a lot of people give them credit for.
The most notable, and I would encourage you to read up on this because I think you'll be fascinated by it, Jim. Just Google Don Siegelman. America, you know, he's become America's most prominent political prisoner.
Who?
Don Siegelman.
I don't know. We have a bad connection. I can barely hear you.
Don Siegelman.
Okay.
He's a former governor of Alabama, and he was leaned on by the Bush family when he refused to support George in his first run for president. He's a Democrat. He's a political prisoner. Read up on him. You'll be fascinated. It's an astonishing piece of political skullduggery. Well, Jim, thank you very much, and I appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon, all right?
I can't even hear you.
All right. Take care. And onward. Hi, who have I got?
Bob.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Bob, this is Ed.
Hey, Ed, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Setting them up and knocking them down.
Yeah, well, sound like you're doing a good job. I just picked up on just a little bit of the conversation. That's what I was going to ask you about. What do you think about the outturn of this last night?
I think it certainly doesn't an election season make. Iowa went for Obama. New Hampshire went for Clinton. It's one to one at the end of the first inning. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the game's just begun. But I would vote for Hillary now before I would Obama for two or three reasons. As cocky as he got after he won the Iowa deal. And I think that it brought Hillary Clinton down to earth a whole lot. I think the humility showed up at some point there, you know, at least if it wasn't an act. But these people are not only politicians, most of them are actors, too.
Well, they're certainly schooled by their handlers. There's no doubt about that, Ed.
Mm-hmm.
But this story I've been talking about Maureen Dowd column from the New York Times. Basically, she alleges that you know everything that Hillary Clinton does is calculated and cold and you know purely a matter of Machiavellian politics. And I can't stomach that stuff. I'm hard on Senator Clinton simply because I try to educate myself about the process and be aware of where the candidates have stood and what they stand for. But there is the media, I hate to say conspiracy, but the media mindset toward Senator Clinton is sickening, Ed. It is just sickening.
And how, what respect?
Well, this remark, she says, with regard to Hillary Clinton, crying doesn't usually work in campaigns, only in relationships. I'll bet she spent hours thinking about it beforehand. talking about, you know, the crying. There wasn't a tear that ran down the woman's face, not one tear.
Mm-hmm.
But she kind of took a deep breath and, I just don't want to see us fall backward. And all of a sudden, she's, you know, they've got her bawling like Scarlett O'Hara pining for Ashley.
Do you think that really swayed anybody, though? Do you?
Well, I mean, you mean the...
It wouldn't have me. That scenario would not have convinced me to vote for either way. I would have either been for or her against her. But the only thing I'm saying is she, her hind end hit the ground because she just didn't think she could lose. And Obama, after he won it, he thought he was home free. He acted like the end of the ball game, you know, and the score 21-20, and he won it.
Yeah.
I don't like either one of them, really. And the biggest reason I don't like, as I've said before, is anybody that Jesse Jackson backs, I'm not for him in any respect. I don't have a bit of use for him, and believe it or not, at one time I'd have voted for him for president.
I'm not going to, I mean, but, you know, you and I are both politically astute enough that I don't think either one of us is likely to be fooled into believing that any one person is going to determine somebody's policies or positions. I am extremely disturbed by Senator Clinton's apparently deep and profound relationship with Wall Street bankers. I am disturbed by Senator Obama's cult of personality that's going on and the backing from Oprah and all of that stuff, not for racial reasons, but for the fact that it cheapens the political process. I'm disturbed by the corporate money that Obama has taken. I'm disturbed by the corporate money that Senator Clinton has taken. I'm disturbed by the fact that, yes, indeed, John Edwards does make quite a bit of money as a representative for a hedge fund. And I'm disturbed by all of these things, Ed, not because of the personalities involved, but because of the issues themselves. I want a Democratic Party that acts like what the Democratic Party says it stands for. If you've got the chairman of Goldman Sachs yelling so loud, screaming his fool head off in your ear, you're not going to be able to hear a working man whispering in the other one.
That hasn't been for a long time, and it'll be a long time coming. And you know, the people that really represented that is not in the race at all. I mean, their name may be on the board, but their ideas, and I don't know what's the matter with the working class or the middle class or whatever you want to call them, that they fail. Does that much ignorance prevail among people?
Turn your TV on and see what the number one rated shows in the country are and get back with me, Ed. You know what I mean?
What the number one what is?
What the number one TV shows in America are. Reality programs, game shows, nighttime soap operas. You tell me how dumb the American electorate is.
Yeah, I agree. I have a couple friends. You'll hear them talk about programs like Desperate Housewives and some kind of thing where they've got suitcases with money in it.
Makes me want to run my head into a wall. Does it you?
Yeah. Well, you know, and you talk to them about it. And you mention anything out of the news, where'd you get that at? You know, and this news stuff runs from like 4 o'clock till up to 8, and you know, until people like Nancy Grace or whatever her name is, Larry King. There ain't nothing on. There ain't no news to watch, or at least I don't get the stations that's got it on. And it's a pitiful, you know, I don't know, I guess when people come home from work, they've got other things to do, either work around the house or put
put a couple hours with the kids. But, you know, I don't take a newspaper because I think it's faster and more accurate on television for whatever that's worth. But we don't have a good source of true news. You know, the best news that where I believe more than what these people like, what's the little short guy with the beard's name? Anyway, he's on before Lou Dobbs got on.
Blitzer?
Yeah, Walt Blitzer. I read the stuff that's down on the
crawler
that runs it by, yeah, whatever that is. That's probably more accurate than what any of them says, in my opinion, because they don't even cover, like, the bombing of the Madrid airport, stuff like that that's run by this evening. And it just, the news media is a dang joke. You know, I think all of it is. And you know what? The way it is, there's going to be more people registering independent than ever before because of the way the news and the way these politicians are acting. And I still, as far as politicians, the one I'd like to see, and it ain't over. Like I said, it ain't over till the fat lady sings, but I still don't think that Edwards is out of this race yet.
Yeah, he's got to win one, though, Ed.
Yeah, I know. And I don't know if that can be in his own state or not, because you have that's a large black state, plus there's a lot of, and I heard one person, but this barber that was cutting somebody's hair on there was saying the reason the blacks was going to vote for Hillary was because they want to make sure their vote wasn't wasted by voting for Obama. Now, you're talking about a plain, outright discrimination against his own, and plus a lie. They're, you know, somebody that is faithful for something, and I guarantee you, I will vote for John Edwards if I get a chance. And I know a lot of other people that I know is going that way. But this is just not over yet, I don't think. And I think deeper into the South, you're going to have more people that turn to Edwards.
Well, I think we will see. And I think I think Edwards is probably trying to hang on for dear life until he can get into the Southern primaries and make it to, what are we calling it, Mega Super, Super Duper Tuesday or whatever.
Yeah.
I think he's got to do that.
That's exactly my opinion, too, that once he, if he can keep the foothold until it gets to these states, and, you know, that's another factor. They don't realize, and, you know, I've got a couple faults with him, but the main thing is he has represented the working people all of his life. He knows what it is to be a worker from his dad's perspective. But now that don't make him all the things that he says he is. But at least I really believe that he will fight for the middle class and for the jobs and the things that matter to the everyday American, and especially health care. Because health care, I don't know if people really took a look at health care and where we're at on that, but do you know the poorest of the people have got a card? The richest of people don't need it. And the middle class American worker is footing the bill for everything
in the middle.
It's just absolutely an unfair situation. And you know what? I got I don't know what the percentage was on the raised that that disability Social Security has, but it don't even pay your gas bill for a month.
Oh, heavens no.
Well, it did mine, because I only put $15.30 in mine since October in my truck, because, you know, they ain't going to get no nothing. Normally where I would go and maybe do an extra eat out or something like that, I just ain't doing it. I ain't giving the gas companies. I wouldn't, if I found out this failing, I wouldn't give them a penny to pull them out because of the way they've done rip-offs to the people. But that again is politics. We've not had one. I don't know. Now maybe you can got something you can add to it, but I haven't seen one iota of effort from the Bush administration to correct or reduce this amount of oil. And they got us going like a yo-yo. Well, so what? It's under $100 a barrel now. You know, it's about 97. But that's a yo-yo, just up and down. And it's just hard to tell when we open season on the highway and start vacations and so forth. It's hard to tell what gas is going to and what has.
It ain't going down, Ed.
No, I agree. And, you know, we're 13, 14 cents higher than the national average right now.
Yeah.
West Virginia is. You can go 162 miles from here down to what they call Fuel City, and gas is always 19 to 21 cents a gallon cheaper than it is here. Now, you tell me what makes that except greedy merchants. And I don't have nothing from the merchants or the gas or these oil companies.
No.
So when I have to go to Richmond, I take me some everything I got and fill it up, and it gives me an extra month of driving.
Yeah, when you can do it that way, it does.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, Bob, I've taken up enough of your time. I just wondered what your outlook on.
Oh, I guess you could just sort of write me off as jaded at this point. I'd like to get out there and rah rah and think that Hillary Clinton's the neatest thing since sliced bread, and Barack Obama's is the peanut butter on that bread, and John Edwards. But you know what? I got an email a minute ago from a listener, Ed, and you might find this interesting. Listener wrote and said, "You want a principled Democratic Party today? You'll have better luck finding an American virgin to marry." And you know, I understand that, but dadgummit, we're entitled, are we not, to believe that America can be better? Isn't that part of our nature, Ed? Want better, to want to fix problems, or do we just lay down and walla? And say, listen, you know, Washington's going to be bought off by the lobbyists from now on, and there's no sense in trying to do otherwise.
Yeah, well, it's, I think they own it lock, stock, and barrel now. You know, so whoever gets it, I'll tell you, if I was educated and all the rest that goes with it, I wouldn't want the job. I wouldn't have it because, it's like walking through a den of snakes and wondering if the copperhead's going to get you, or the rattlesnake, or the cobra, you know?
Yeah, you wind up bit any way you slice
it. Yeah, you're going to get bit any way you go. That's exactly right. And I'm just, I don't have, I told you before, when I listened to the Democratic get-together they had there about a month ago, it sounded like a bunch of monkeys hunting marbles, the right color marble. And they ain't none of them found the first one yet. So I don't have any, you know, but you got to pick the best out of the worst of, you know, out of all of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, I'll get off here.
All right. You want me to put you back on hold?
Sure.
All right. Thank you, Ed. Thanks. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, same here.
Bye now. Our good friend Ed from here in Fayette County. And let's see if this is still a person. It is, it is. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke.
I was going to see, how'd you enjoy the Tom Brokaw thing?
Quite.
Like I said, I begin to wonder now if the NBC people are starting to look at the MSNBC people going, do we have to go on their shows? You know, because like I say, you don't see Brokaw doing Tucker Carlson. You don't see him doing Hardball.
No.
You might see him on Oberman, but that's about it. So, I'm, you know, and this the funny thing was this morning I got up, and when I was getting up this morning, I turned on Morning Joe just to see what they were saying. And there's Matthew saying, oh, it was the polling, it was the racial vote, it was, you know, it was anything but it had something to do with them. It was a dog howling in the distance. That's what caused it. Yeah, something.
Yeah, we didn't have, no, not us.
Anything but us, and I tell you, like I say, it, over at Crooks and Liars, they've got all the clips. They also got that Rachel Maddow clip that Susan, I believe, was talking about. And you know, it's. I don't think it was the main thing, but I, like I say, the Tweety effect was in effect. You know what I mean? It's one of those things when everybody's telling you that, you know, you have to do this, people go, why?
And go the other way.
Yeah. I mean, when everybody's telling you you're wrong if you don't agree with them, and you're sitting there going, well, wait a minute, why am I wrong? You know, it's just one of the things. Is like I say, when everybody's just screaming at you that you know, A comes before B, when you're sitting there reading BA, and they're going, no, A becomes before B, and you're going, no. And so like I say, the more they yell at you, the more you're going, no.
Yeah, really, really no.
Well, I watched the thing here that had the repeat thing with Jon Stewart, and he was showing the thing with Hillary, and he said, you know, he had the lead up to it. He was talking about it. He said, and now let's take a look at this breakdown by her. And they showed the thing. He goes, oh dear God, I hope they never show when I get a flu shot. He said, if they thought that was a breakdown, you know, because if you didn't ever watch the tape, you'd think she fell on the ground and threw a fit. Description of it.
Yeah, I mean. The Maureen Dowd, I've been beating on this Maureen Dowd column a little bit this evening. You would think that she was just sitting on the ground with her head in her hands and her mascara running all over the place. Yeah.
Because I mean, if you listen to it without watching the tape, that's what you think that happened.
But this is the Britneyization of political coverage.
Well, you know. I remember about 2-3 weeks ago when they had the thing where they jumped on Bill because Bill had mentioned something, and they said, well, he was talking about that we'd done something. I can't remember what it was. It was Swift voting, you know. And I saw the tape of it, and Bill never even mentioned it. You know, he talked about the press, but he hadn't used any specific, you know, incidents or anything.
No.
Or I think he talked about the Swift voting of John Kerry. And the next thing you heard was, well, Bill, you're just saying the press is Swift voting Hillary.
Sometimes
the second line and cut everything out in between.
Luke, sometimes I wonder if the goal of all of this, and I'm just basing this on the way it's beginning to make me feel, I wonder if the goal of all this is just to completely turn off the American electorate to the point that we get to November and go, sick of it, staying home. Not going to do it.
Well, one thing I got to admit, though, is apparently the turnout's great because they were saying that, what was it, New Hampshire? They thought they had like a 65% turnout. You know, they were talking about the turnout was higher than it has been.
Yeah, but again, that's because we're at the front end, and it's Iowa and it's New Hampshire, and that's traditional, and there's been such a buzz made out of it that people. People run out to stand in line. But
at the same time, I think like we all think that Bush has poisoned it so bad that when the general election comes, everybody's going to turn out to make sure that there's a Democrat in office.
I hope so.
I hope so.
I mean, I don't want people to get the wrong impression of me in this, Luke, that I'm saying, you know, screw the lot of them, a pox on all their houses, and I'm staying home. I'm not.
Oh, no.
I will be at the polling place
because not just the presidential election, all the up and down, you know, senator on down, all of those down to the dog catcher. Those are important elections.
Absolutely. On the other hand, being the paranoid that I am, I understand that there's no liberal bias in the media. If there's any bias, it is a conservative bias. And as such, it's worth remembering that low voter turnouts always favor the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, if the American media can get the American people so sick of the process that they just throw their hands up in disgust and despair, mission accomplished, as the saying goes.
Oh, hey, let me ask you a question now off of the election. You'll just
okay.
Switch subjects or just for something different. I was just totally amazed. I did not realize the Iran Navy's made up of speedboats.
Have you seen the picture?
I mean, I didn't see anything there that told me they were Iranians. As far as I know, those were Halliburton guys in those boats.
Well, they looked like they could have been leftovers from the Second World War, and probably are.
That's you know, but that's what I mean. I'm sitting there going, I mean, I'm sorry, Iran has some money. I think, guys, they'd have a little bit better boats than this. They could have some patrol boats, you know, real patrol boats. I mean, this looks like a whole bunch of, you know, group of guys in speedboats out there chasing around, you know, like you say, old speedboats. And I'm sitting there going, and this is some major threat?
Well, you, unless I misapprehended my viewing of this photograph, there was rust running down the sides of the hull, for heaven's sakes.
That, you know, that's the thing. You know, like I said, though, you know, as far as I know, for all we know, it could be like the old days. You know, as far as we know, it could be KBR employees in those boats. You know what I mean? Just so George can have somebody to scream about while he's over in Israel.
Well, yeah, and that's like the Harry Shearer piece, the paragraph that you shot me. And how you can't take issue with Harry Shearer on this. He says, I have no way of knowing what the Iranian fast boats did. Fast boats. They're not swift boats or anything. They're fast boats. In relation to American ships, but what I do know is that the United States has a history of fabricated maritime incidents as trigger mechanisms for larger military actions. Gulf of Tonkin, anyone? Remember the Maine? So what I want to know is, after a period in which the administration's credibility on matters foreign has been tattered, if not shredded, why is the incident with Iran being reported totally out of Pentagon press releases?
Well, and it's all the people out there. I mean, you know, of course we aren't going to let anybody. I mean, if a helicopter came over from say somewhere, you know, that I know there's not, but say somebody from, probably what the area running there is.
Well,
probably if you had from one of the Georgian states or something, you know, a helicopter came out, they'd probably shoot at them so they wouldn't get any pictures of it. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
you know,
I do.
We're going to be the only ones, because we're out here in the middle of the ocean, so we are, or the there in the Straits of Hormuz.
Sure does play well. Yeah, sure does play well, though, doesn't it, Luke? Because there he is in Israel now, George Bush doing his obligatory pilgrimage. And what's he say when he gets to a microphone? What's the first thing he says? Iran is a threat to world peace. Well, how easy would that have been for him to say if he didn't have this stupid little phonied up, dummied up, ginned up gunboat incident to fall back on?
Well, did you read the stuff? I guess it's probably some last week into this week, talking about how much what the Israelis have done to beef up security. They just got pulled a division out just to make sure, you know. It must look like May Day in Moscow. They must have so many people in uniform around there. Because they were talking about, you know, they pulled out all the stops. You know, they've been over there. The Israelis have been, apparently the Israelis have been over doing quite a bit of helicopter attacks over in the Gaza. And you're sitting there wondering, why would you be over there shooting up Gaza? Well, you know, why? Because you're going to get some reprisal attacks. Gee, just while George is there, there's going to be some missiles come in.
And he'll come home all impressed.
And yeah, they held up, you know, held back all them Palestinian terrorists. You know, it's like I say, it's bad puppet theater. You know, when you sit there and look at the whole picture, the only problem, like I say, like we're talking about, the only problem is you got to be careful because they're showing you little bits. And you got to sit there and look at what's going on all over the region and realize there's not really anything going on at the level they're trying to tell you it is. You know, oh, this is just a great thing. It's like, look, they have they sit there, you know, between them and the Palestinians, and they trade missiles every week. You know, they throw one or two over, they throw one or two back. You know, I mean, that's even now they're supposedly quieter than it used to be. They still do that.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm being informed from the chat room that we're ponying up $2,000 a night for his hotel.
Oh, God. Can somebody please lose his passport when he won't let him back in the country?
This whole thing is embarrassing. It is absolutely embarrassing to contemplate what this trip is and has been.
Well, it's like we talked about. It's like how can you sit there and say you're trying to negotiate with the Palestinians when you're talking with the guy you're talking with doesn't speak for 40% of the Palestinian people. And he's the one you put in, and he's the one that threw the people that were elected out of office. You know, all those Hamas people that were really elected, sorry, they're all out. We're putting in a new government.
Well, you know, this is, you know, the things that they've done in advance of George Bush's trip to Israel are I'm embarrassed. I am embarrassed, okay?
I mean, the thing of it is, right now with the election, unfortunately, a lot of this stuff is, like we say, sliding under the radar.
Well, consider, are you aware of this? They turned the lights out on the old city of Jerusalem so George Bush could enjoy sunrise over the holy city.
Oh, God.
I'm not kidding. Agence France-Presse, lights in the old city of Jerusalem will be turned off before dawn this week, so visiting U.S. President George W. Bush can get a better view of the sun rising over its ancient walls. Oh, but wait, it's a Ginsu commercial. There's more.
Oh, God.
Bush, who arrives in the Middle East on Wednesday for a visit lasting more than a week, had... And this is the one. You sitting down? You got to stay... No bricks. Get your head away from the wall, okay, Luke?
I know.
Bush had made a request to watch the sunrise over the old city from his suite at the King David Hotel. To make the scene more dramatic, the authorities have decided to turn off the lights illuminating the limestone walls before dawn on Thursday and Friday.
Oh, God. Can we get the helicopters to come in while they're playing the ride of the Valkyries too?
Well, which right-wing religion industry fundamentalist mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freak suggested he'd want to do that? Because he didn't come up with that by himself.
Oh, no, I think I smell the greasy hands of Pat Robertson in this.
Or
the potential one is going to be on the 700 Club.
Awaiting Bush at his King David suite, reportedly costing $2,600 a night, sorry, I gave you the bargain price earlier, will be a white terry bathrobe embroidered with his name in gold. Jeez,
Kurt
Luke.
Blossom? No, wrong one, sorry.
That's the way you treat a king.
I know. Oh, gosh.
Meanwhile, the main highway leading into Jerusalem from the west has been completely closed in one direction, has been, after Bush arrives to allow the unhindered passage of the convoy containing his hundreds-strong entourage. I'm a history geek, right?
Uh-huh.
This guy is looking more and more... I mean, it's sort of like reverse world. This guy is looking more and more like a Persian emperor of old. This guy is looking like Darius the Third.
Well, it's one of those things.
Whose bag, you know, because his train was over a mile and a half long.
Mm-hmm. Well, it almost sounds to me like I'm surprised they just didn't give out the order to say have all cars taken off the streets, you know.
Oh, I'm sure that, I'm sure that's probably happened. The Telegraph from the UK reports Jesus only needed an ass to take him to Jerusalem. President George W. Bush has different requirements when he arrives. American cargo planes have been arriving for days now at Ben Gurion International Airport, delivering the fleet of 25 armored vehicles and the squadron of helicopters that will ferry the presidential party around on its 48-hour visit to the Holy Land.
Now, is it true that one of the vehicles will be the porta potty traveling?
Oh, I'm sure the secret. Can you imagine filling out your lifelong ambition and dream of being in the Secret Service, only to be put on George Bush's catch the poop detail? Because they really do that.
I know. That's what I mean. It's sort of like you just got to sit there and just go. I've got a gun. I could just end it, be done with it. You know.
The White House has booked all 237 rooms at the King David Hotel.
Oh, God.
Any car, here we go, Luke. Any car left on any city center road to be used by Mr. Bush will be towed.
Oh, God.
Residents of those streets will only be allowed to move on foot after screening by Shin Bet, Israel's secret police.
Oh.
And apparently...
They'll have the snipers on top of the buildings?
Sure. This is embarrassing. This is just embarrassing.
Well, you know how it is.
He's scared of everybody. You know, he's visiting the so-called Holy Land, and he forgets one of the most critical pronouncements of that brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer who reminded people, he who loves his life will lose it.
You said something a while ago. They said, you know, somebody said that they couldn't think of anybody any worse than George Bush. And I go, yes, I can. He lives right across the street from him.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I figured it out. You know who told him to have him to tell him that he wanted to see the sunrise over the walls of Jerusalem?
Which one?
That's Joe Lieberman's doing. Guarantee it. Lead pipe cinch. Colonel Mustard in the conservatory with the billiard ball. It was Joe Lieberman told him to do that. It was either that or Pastor Hagee.
But you know good and well Joe is on the trip. I have no doubt that he's one of the people on the trip.
Yeah, he's in the dummy that contains the ventriloquist the suitcases that contain the ventriloquist dummies.
Oh God, I tell you what. But you know it's just one of those things. You're sitting there going, you know, whoever the Democrat is, we'll think positive. Whoever the Democrats elected is this next time around, they never have to spend 6 months just traveling around with the whole world going, I'm sorry, we're sorry.
Yeah.
Please don't hold it against us.
I mean,
their minds.
Yeah, I tender my apology to the people of Jerusalem. 10,500 Israeli police.
Imagine how many people they probably already picked up and locked away for the trip while he's there. They probably grabbed, you know, the usual suspects. Probably shove them in every hole they can.
Oh, this is just... It just makes you ashamed. It just makes you ashamed.
Oh, I tell you, it's just like you're sitting there going, you know, like you say, welcome to Bizarro World.
Oh, by the way, they're shutting down the roads, Luke, and nobody can park. But all of his travel's being done by helicopter.
Oh, God. But the convoy goes along just in case.
Yeah.
Oh God. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's what they're taking Joe along for. He sits in the car and pretends he's president. You know, sort of the decoy.
Oh, but on the you do know he had a stop on the way over to Israel, right?
I see. I'm trying to remember if I read this.
He stopped and had a little chit chat with Turkish President Abdullah Gül.
Oh gosh.
And they agreed, we're going to work together to confront a common enemy.
Well, the fun part of all this...
Wait. You know who the common enemy is?
There's Rockies?
Kurds. The only people that we've got a decent working relationship with in that region.
That's what I mean. You know, that's the beauty of it. Here it is. You know, when this first all started, you know, we thought that was going to be the one that was eventually going to blow up, and now it has. You know, it's like... You know, we knew eventually that, you know, like I said, the Kurds held themselves, you know, for kind of what's been 2-3 years. You know, they haven't done a whole lot in that respect. But I think they said, you know what, we've been good boys for 3 years. Now we're going over that border. We're going to take back part of our Kurdistan.
This is the quote from George Bush. You're going to love it. We deal with common problems. One such problem is our continuing fight against a common enemy, and that's terrorists. And such a common enemy is the PKK. It's an enemy to Turkey. It's an enemy to Iraq. It's an enemy. It's an enemy people who want to live in peace. Huh? What?
Humming, 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 humming.
It's an enemy people who want to live in peace. The terrorists never stop thinking of ways to hurt America, and neither do we.
And unfortunately, he's doing more than they are.
Yeah, they can't even shut him up for the last few months he's going to be in office. He's going to embarrass us all the way to the end, Luke.
Oh, it's like maybe somewhere, maybe by July, maybe we can convince him to take a bike ride around the country. At least it means something slower than a car.
Hey, George, I hear the cycling's great in Gaza.
Let's show him Forrest Gump. Maybe he'd think about running across the country 3 or 4 times.
Oh.
Maybe he wouldn't stop when he gets to the ocean.
Yeah, so we've taken the one group of people we had that we actually were getting any cooperation from, the Kurds, and now we're going to start shooting them along with the Turks. I mean, us and the Turks, we'll shoot the Kurds.
Wait, with George, there's no telling. They're on both sides of the border, so let's shoot both sides of the borders.
I want a white bathrobe with my name embroidered in gold.
Oh gosh, it's like I say, I'm sure somebody in a couple of weeks writes the story on what all went on this, we'll just kind of look at it and just kind of go, oh God, no.
Oh, by the way, a little bit of breaking news. Apparently, Bill Richardson is bowing out of the race.
Well, I've heard 2 or 3 different things. One group said yes. One group said they hadn't confirmed it. You know, it depends. The biggest problem we have nowadays with the news services are one person says it, all the rest of them all of a sudden go, it's gospel. They don't bother to call and ask. Did you see that thing with Paul Begala wrote?
Yeah, I did.
Where they said, everybody said, well, him and Carville are going to join the Hillary camp. And he said, and Paul Begala writes, it's over at Huffington Post, I saw it there. And he writes what happens, he says, said that hadn't even been talked about. He said Fox News was running the story, said he had people called, said Tim Russert called, you know, different people, some emailed, and he was, you know, telling them it wasn't happening. Said they got through, they finally sent a message to the Fox News and the guy, whoever it was doing it, and he said they would take it under advisement.
Gotta love them. Just gotta love them.
Fit the makeup. All right, let me let you go, bud.
All right, Luke, you take care. Good talking to you, my friend. Bye now. And onward. Let's see who we've got here. Hi, how you doing?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Oh, they're so disgusting.
Which part?
All of it. Oh, goodness.
I mean, if you can narrow it down to one disgusting part, you will be doing me a great service.
Well, the white robe, for one. Oh, my gosh, please.
I want to take one of those donkey tours over the palm fronds into Jerusalem. That's what my favorite philosopher did.
Oh, God, he's a creep.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, that is plainly put and elegantly put, Juanita. He's a creep.
Yeah, he is definitely a creep. I mean, oh, God, I don't know. Do you remember when they wanted to shut down London? When he was
Yes, I do.
And the mayor.
Oh, I remember when they said that Buckingham Palace wasn't sufficient to George Bush's security needs.
Oh, no, and he took...
You know, where the Queen lives.
Over there, too.
Yeah. And he went to Austria, and they collected his poop. No, it was Germany, I think. It was Germany.
Well, you know, and another thing, one time... Cheney, the plane he was in, they were in like one of those bulletproof trailers inside of the plane.
Golly Moses. You know, I think I finally found out why they were collecting the presidential caca.
Why?
They were afraid a terrorist would get hold of it and clone George.
Oh. Oh, please, help us, Lord.
Ain't nobody else helping us, so, you know, I'll take it anywhere we can get it.
Well, you were talking about Darius having the train, what, a mile
yeah.
and a half?
Well, when he went to do battle with Alexander the Great at Issos.
Oh, he lost, too, didn't he?
Well, he did, but he took the Queen Mother, he took several of his wives, a lot of his concubines, he took a tenth the size of a football field and lost it all. Alexander wound up taking care of Darius III's mother for the rest of her life.
Oh.
And his wife Statira didn't want to go back home to Darius, or Darius, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, well, the Persian pronunciation is actually Diarvoush, but that's neither here nor there.
I wanted to. Can I talk about something that you and Kate, I believe, were talking about yesterday?
You can talk about anything you want to, Juanita.
Well, it's just something that I heard her say. I couldn't hear it all. This is like a busy time of the evening for me.
Sure.
But anyway, I think she's talking about the global warming. And this is something I've always wondered. Why did they call it global warming?
Well,
I mean, I know there's probably the scientific, but I think more people would believe it if they would simply call it man's pollution of the earth. Because you can't deny, how can you deny there's pollution?
Well, you know, they took global warming, and that was so offensive to the industrial interests of the United States that it had to be changed to climate change.
But that still, you know, that still doesn't resonate, I don't think, with the average person. And that enables the Bushites, you know, to
minimize it.
Well, look at all, you know, all, you know, we didn't do all of that. You know, that's, you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that maybe we should take, that's one thing we should take a note from the Republicans. They give all these beautiful names to their horrible ideas. And we could give a different name, you know. I think they call it man's pollution some way, you know. Maybe better word.
Yeah, how about global poisoning?
There you go. That sounds good to me.
Man, am I quick on my feet or what, Juanita?
Huh?
Nothing. I'm kidding. Don't.
I didn't hear you.
Nah, don't worry about it. I was being a smart aleck.
But I do. I wonder why they call it that, because a lot of people, you know, we have cold weather.
Yeah, you call it that because that's actually what happens. But then,
true.
The right-wingers turn around and, you know, when it's 14 degrees in the first week of February, well, that global warming sure is something there, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that just betrays their own ignorance. Because, you know, it was cold as blue blazes here last week. Yeah, freezing.
We had a freeze, too.
Six, 8 inches of snow on the ground. You know what? It was gone in 2 days, and 2 days later, it was 70 degrees.
Uh-huh.
The planet's in a mess. We're killing where we live. We just are. And that's, you know, that's part of the reason why I was so excited to see Coal River Mountain Watch come on board with us here, because
I heard some of those ads yesterday. My gosh. That's about as bad as Bush.
Well, it comes from the same people. You got to understand.
Oh, yeah.
One of the times that those ads are made by Walker Machinery, and one of the times that George Bush came to visit us and grace us with his royal presence here in West Virginia, he went straight to Walker Machinery and hung out with the head man there, because he's a big Bush donor and a big Republican backer,
uh-huh.
You know, because he's an earth rapist.
Well, you know, those are his kind of people. Didn't he say that?
Yeah, yeah.
His base.
Yeah, the haves and the have-mores.
Uh-huh. And, you know, the rest of us, you know, we're just uniquely American because we're working our brains out.
Yeah. And she's got three jobs. Isn't that uniquely American?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm tired of being quite so unique, you know?
Me too. Me too. But anyhow, yeah, I would love to see our country do what's right for a change.
Yeah, that's the sad part, the for a change part. But you know what? You know what, Juanita? I'm trying to pull myself up out of this grim little morass that I've found myself in.
Yeah.
Most of America does do the right thing.
Yeah.
Most of America tries really hard to do the right thing.
Yes, it is.
Most of America that screws up and does the wrong thing does so out of reasons beyond their control, poverty and ignorance.
Right.
Because the means by which they could get out of either one or both of those two things Those gates are closed to them by the Republican Party. And that's why, you know, even if the change is only incremental, that is why it is so important that the change that we make be incrementally forward and not backward.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can't.
We are so backwards. I mean, it's just, I was raised with a lot of ignorance, like sexual ignorance and all like that, and not because nobody really knew what to tell you anyway. And, you know, it causes you to do things, I believe. Ignorance causes you to do things out of fear or whatever, you know.
Yeah sure.
And that's my, at least it, with me, that's what happened. Because I was always so curious about different things, and nobody, you know, there was nobody. There weren't books or anything except maybe really technical stuff, and they're, why are they wanting to go back and not, and have people be ignorant again?
Because that's what's best for them, Juanita.
To me, I believe it's better to have, you know, people say, oh, well, we've gone too far. Well, I would rather it be gone too far than to be the other way too far, you know, with complete ignorance, really pretty well complete ignorance.
My grandparents and my parents both told me that the ultimate goal and aim of the Republican Party is to create a two-class society that is comprised only of the very rich and the very poor.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that.
I do too. And the thing is, I had to grow up and watch it actually happening, Juanita.
Yeah, right. It's happening now.
Yeah, I mean,
and, oh boy, I tell you, I just hope we get somebody, a Democrat anyway.
Well, I want a combination of things. If there's anything to be learned by me, and you know, every one of these programs, these 3 hours every night for me, is not just me babbling my brains out. It's actually a learning process for me because I learn by discussion. And I've realized what I want to see, Juanita, I want to see two things. I want to see a Democrat in the White House, but I also want to see at least 60 Democratic senators so we can get some business done.
Sure.
So we can get some business done because for all the scorn that I have heaped on the failures of this Democratic Congress, the fact of the matter is a lot of good ideas went through the Congress but went to the Senate and died because the Republican Party was allowed to filibuster every good idea that came in there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, it seems like ancient history now, I remember the Employees Free Choice Act killed deader than a stump in the United States Senate. Every attempt to pull back, roll back, end or begin to end the Iraq-upation, killed in the Senate.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Except impeachment.
Well, yeah.
You didn't get a chance.
No. That's still off the table, and Nancy Pelosi has to answer for that.
Yep. And they're just doing more and more to this country. There's no telling what they'll do before it's over.
Looky here, Juanita. You got to understand that this is early January, and the Bushies understand that, at least constitutionally, this comes to an end in about a year, and you are going to see more ugliness, more evil, more maliciousness, more viciousness, more malign intent, more grabbing and grubbing and front feet in the troughism in this final year than you have seen in the previous seven of the Bush administration.
Yeah.
This, and I'm just trying to steal people. I'm just trying to give people a little dose of wake-up. It is going to be, I mean, stone nasty.
Yeah.
Between now and January 20th, 2009.
I'm afraid you're right. Based on past experience, you know, he started off right away. I remember the first thing that I noticed was about the agronomics, you know, cutting down on the control over that. And we've got most of our people in this country, you know, working in conditions and have been. That's what happened to my son when he got disabled, was the conditions he was working in. And he was a very proficient worker, going out of his way, you know, and he just got screwed.
God, I hate it. And for every time, for your son's story, how many millions more are there in the United
right.
States?
Right, absolutely. Because employers in this country that I know about, you know, the South had really had no good unions. We had a few, but they were very weak that I know about. And the workers still have no rights. We've had no rights. They can say anything. I worked in a medical field in the clerical part, let's put it that way. I was blacklisted. It was hard for me to get work after I was blacklisted because somebody didn't like me, you know, and I had a problem for a long time with authority. And I was always for the underdog, and that does that surprise you? But I was blacklisted, and they can say anything about you, do anything. I had my salary cut way back, and, you know, if I wanted a job, I had to stay. And it's just, you have no rights, and they can say anything they want to about you.
Yeah. And you have no protections through government. And, well, the free market will take care of that. You know, tell me about the miracle of the free market when your kids are going hungry. You know?
You know, you were. I'm gonna skip to something because I want you to bring this up. That
okay, we gotta go here in a sec.
Ron Paul.
Yeah.
He made a speech today, and I think a lot of people haven't heard that before, and I think that's why they're turning to him. That's what I want to say.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay.
Well, Juanita, we gotta roll along. Thanks for a wonderful conversation. I do appreciate
you too,
it.
I thank you, and God bless.
All right, you too. Bye now.
Bye.
And thanks, everybody. It's been a busy little night, and I've really, really enjoyed it. I hope you'll join me for more of something similar tomorrow evening. We've got a fabulous repeat of the most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program going, Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold. His lumbago is still acting up, and he's still down in the back, as the saying goes. So we've got a repeat coming, but there will be a horn section, and there will be a Foxed Up segment with John Fox coming to you live from Sydney, Australia, coming along at about midnight Eastern time. So stick around for all of that. Don't go anywhere. Why would you want to? The most profound, the most dedicated, the most earnest liberal radio conversation programming on planet Earth, right here on the Head On Radio Network, made possible in part by the wonderful, wonderful people at Coal River Mountain Watch. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Peter Godbold. Even though he is down in the back, he still takes time to make sure the computers are not sick here. That kind of dedication you can't buy. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you value what happens here, you value the White Rose Society. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
the utilities to the company. It's like a company store type thing. And the Walton family has its own special...
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistan being given 10 days to lift current martial law or face suspension from a 53-nation bloc. Foreign ministers put out the warning in light of continuing emergency rule in Pakistan. Former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto placed again under house arrest for the second time in 4 days. She's being kept from leading tomorrow's 185-mile procession in protest of current martial law. President Musharraf promises that general elections will be held by January 9th, but that the state of emergency imposed 1 week ago will stay in place till then. Hamas police killing 7 people in Gaza City during a huge political rally to commemorate the death of Yasser Arafat. Another 130 people were wounded. There's a growing humanitarian crisis in Somalia. Over the last 24 hours, residents fled the capital city of Mogadishu as government forces increased efforts to crush Islamist-led insurgents. Aid workers say at least 70 people have been killed during more than 1 week of intense fighting, bringing the total number of displaced Somalians to 850,000. The U.S. military is reversing the troop surge in Iraq. Commanders are waiting to see if the recent drop in violence will hold. 20 combat brigades have shrunk to 19 in the volatile Diyala province. The White House is under federal court order to preserve copies of its email messages in response to a pair of lawsuits brought by 2 private citizens groups. The U.S. Justice Department asked that the courts accept a White House promise to save all future backup tapes, but U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy decided that was not enough. As the Roman Catholic Church in the U.S. attempts to overcome a damaging scandal involving pedophile priests, Pope Benedict XVI makes a visit to America next April. He'll visit Washington, D.C. and New York City, including an address to the United Nations. It's the first planned papal visit to the U.S. since 1999. And Republican presidential candidate Fred Thompson is being endorsed by an anti-abortion group, which could increase his support among conservative voters. The National Right to Life Committee plans to make the announcement later this evening. Thompson's election committee, though, has declined to confirm the endorsement right now. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check science and business news just ahead.
PM Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
In Valencia, Spain, a meeting today of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, co-winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. The group is compiling a summary of 3 comprehensive reports on global warming. Former Vice President Al Gore is now an official venture capitalist, the 2000 Nobel Peace Prize winner today, joining Silicon Valley's top